Maybe, maybe. Fane rubbed his chin pensively. Tomorrow, you say. In that time... You won't forget your promise. You won't be letting her...
I won't let her hurt you, Rand said, wondering how he could stop an Aes Sedai, whatever she wanted to do.
She won't hurt me, Fane said. No, she won't. I won't be letting her.
Like a flash, he hared past Rand into the crowd.
Master Fane, Rand called. Wait!
He dashed out of the alley just in time to catch sight of a ragged coat disappearing around the next corner. Still calling, he ran after it, darted around the corner. He only had time to see a man's back before he crashed into it, and they both went down in a heap in the mud.
Can't you watch where you're going?
Came a mutter from under him, and Rand scrambled up in surprise.
Matt?
Matt sat up with a baleful glare and began scraping mud off his cloak with his hands.
You must really be turning into a city man. Sleep all morning and run right over people.
Climbing to his feet, he stared at his muddy hands, then muttered and wiped them off on his cloak.
Listen, you'll never guess who I thought I just saw.
Padan Fane, Rand said.
Padan Fane! How did you know? I was talking to him, but he ran off. So the trolloc...
Matt stopped to look around warily, but the crowd was passing them by with never a glance. Rand was glad he had learned a little caution.
So they didn't get him. I wonder why he left Emmons Field without a word like that. Probably started running then, too, and didn't stop until he got here. But why was he running just now?
Rand shook his head and wished he had not. It felt as though it might fall off.
I don't know, except that he's afraid of Mistress Alice.
All this watching what you said was not easy.
He doesn't want her to know he's here. He made me promise I wouldn't tell her. Well, his secret is safe with me, Matt said. I wish he didn't know where I was either.
Matt, people still streamed by without paying them any heed, but Rand lowered his voice anyway and leaned closer.
Matt, did you have a nightmare last night about a man who killed a rat?
Matt stared at him without blinking.
You too?
He said finally.
And Perrin, I suppose. I almost asked him this morning, but... He must have. Blood and ashes. Now somebody's making us dream things. Rand, I wish nobody knew where I was.
There were dead rats all over the inn this morning. He did not feel as afraid at saying it as he would have earlier. He did not feel much of anything.
Their backs were broken.
His voice rang in his own ears. If he was getting sick, he might have to go to Moraine. He was surprised that even the thought of the one power being used on him did not bother him. Matt took a deep breath, hitching his cloak, and looked around as if searching for somewhere to go.
What's happening to us, Rand? What?
I don't know. I'm going to ask Tom for advice about whether to tell anyone else.
No, not her. Maybe him, but not her.
The sharpness of it took Rand by surprise.
Then you believed him.
He did not need to say which him he meant. The grimace on Matt's face said he understood.
No, Matt said slowly. It's the chances, that's all. If we tell her, and he was lying, then maybe nothing happens. Maybe. But maybe just him being in our dreams is enough for... I don't know.
He stopped to swallow.
If we don't tell her, maybe we'll have some more dreams. Rats or no rats, dreams are better than... Remember the fairy? I say we keep quiet.
All right. Rand remembered the fairy, and Moraine's threat, too. But somehow it seemed a long time ago.
All right. Perrin won't say anything, will he?
Matt went on, bouncing on his toes.
We have to get back to him. If he tells her, she'll figure it out about all of us. You can bet on it. Come on.
He started off briskly through the crowd. Rand stood there looking after him until Matt came back and grabbed him. At the touch of his arm, he blinked, then followed his friend.
What's the matter with you? Matt asked. You going to sleep again?
I think I have a cold, Rand said.
His head was as tight as a drum and almost as empty.
You can get some chicken soup when we get back to the inn,
Matt said. He kept up a constant chatter as they hunted through the packed streets. Rand made an effort to listen, and even to say something now and then, but it was an effort. He was not tired. He did not want to sleep. He just felt as if he were drifting. After a while, he found himself telling Matt about Min. "A dagger with a ruby, eh?" Matt said. "I like that. I don't know about the eye, though. Are you sure she wasn't making it up? It seems to me she would know what it all means, if she really is a soothsayer."
"She didn't say she's a soothsayer," Rand said.
"I believe she does see things. Remember, Moraine was talking to her when we finished our baths? And she knows who Moraine is."
Matt frowned at him.
"I thought we weren't supposed to use that name."
"No," Rand muttered. He rubbed his head with both hands. It was so hard to concentrate on anything.
"I think maybe you really are sick," Matt said, still frowning.
Suddenly he pulled Rand to a stop by his coat sleeve.
"Look at them!"
Three men in breastplates and conical steel caps, burnished till they shone like silver, were making their way down the street toward Rand and Matt. Even the mail on their arms gleamed. Their long cloaks, pristine white and embroidered on the left breast with a golden sunburst, just cleared the mud and puddles of the street. Their hands rested on their sword hilts, and they looked around them as if looking at things that had wriggled out from under a rotting log. Nobody looked back, though. Nobody even seemed to notice them. Just the same, the three did not have to push through the crowd. The bustle parted to either side of the white-cloaked men, as if by happenstance, leaving them to walk in a clear space that moved with them.
"Do you suppose they're children of the light?"
Matt asked in a loud voice. A passerby looked hard at Matt, then quickened his pace. Rand nodded. Children of the light. White cloaks. Men who hated Aes Sedai. Men who told people how to live, causing trouble for those who refused to obey. If burned farms, and worse, could be called as mild as trouble.
"I should be afraid," he thought. "Or curious. Something, at any rate."
Instead, he stared at them passively.
"They don't look like so much to me," Matt said. "Full of themselves, though, aren't they?"
"They don't matter," Rand said. "The inn. We have to talk to Perrin."
"Like Edward Conger. He always has his nose in the air, too."
Suddenly Matt grinned, a twinkle in his eye.
"Remember when he fell off the wagon bridge and had to tramp home dripping wet? That took him down a peg for a month."
"What does that have to do with Perrin?"
"See that?"
Matt pointed to a cart resting on its shafts in an alleyway just ahead of the children. A single stake held a dozen stacked barrels in place in the flatbed.
"Watch."
Laughing, he darted into a cutler's shop to their left. Rand stared after him, knowing he should do something. That look in Matt's eyes always meant one of his tricks. But oddly, he found himself looking forward to whatever Matt was going to do. Something told him that feeling was wrong, that it was dangerous, but he smiled in anticipation anyway. In a minute, Matt appeared above him, climbing half out of an attic window onto the tile roof of the shop. His sling was in his hands, already beginning to whirl. Rand's eyes went back to the cart. Almost immediately, there was a sharp crack, and the stake holding the barrels broke just as the white cloaks came abreast of the alley. People jumped out of the way as the barrels rolled down the cart shafts with an empty rumble and jounced into the street, splashing mud and muddy water in every direction. The three children jumped no less quickly than anyone else, their superior looks replaced by surprise. Some passers-by fell down, making more splashes, but the three moved agilely, avoiding the barrels with ease. They could not avoid the flying mud that splattered their white cloaks, though. A bearded man in a long apron hurried out of the alley, waving his arms and shouting angrily. But one look at the three trying vainly to shake the mud from their cloaks, and he vanished back into the alley even faster than he had come out. Rand glanced back up at the shop roof. Matt was gone. It had been an easy shot for any Two Rivers lad, but the effect was certainly all that could be hoped for. He could not help laughing. The humor seemed to be wrapped in wool, but it was still funny. When he turned back to the street, the three white cloaks were staring straight at him.
"You'll find something funny, yes?"
The one who spoke stood a little in front of the others.
He wore an arrogant, unblinking look, with a light in his eyes as if he knew something important. Something no one else knew. Rand's laughter cut off short. He and the children were alone with the mud in the barrels. The crowd that had been all around them had found urgent business up or down the street.
"Does fear of the light hold your tongue?"
Anger made the white cloak's narrow face seem even more pinched. He glanced dismissively at the sword hilt sticking out from Rand's cloak.
"Perhaps you are responsible for this, yes?"
Unlike the others, he had a golden knot beneath the sunburst on his cloak. Rand moved to cover the sword, but instead swept his cloak back over his shoulder. In the back of his head was a frantic wonder at what he was doing, but it was a distant thought.
"Accidents happen," he said. "Even to the children of the light."
The narrow-faced man raised an eyebrow.
"You are that dangerous, youngling."
He was not much older than Rand. "Heronmark, Lord Bornhold," one of the others said, warningly. The narrow-faced man glanced at Rand's sword hilt again. The bronze heron was plain, and his eyes widened momentarily. Then his gaze rose to Rand's face, and he sniffed dismissively.
"He is too young." "You are not from this place, yes?"
he said coldly to Rand.
"You come from where?"
"I just arrived in Berlon."
A tingling thrill ran along Rand's arms and legs. He felt flushed, almost warm.
"You wouldn't know of a good inn, would you?"
"You avoid my questions," Bornhold snapped. "What evil is in you that you do not answer me?"
His companions moved up to either side of him, faces hard and expressionless. Despite the mudstains on their cloaks, there was nothing funny about them now. The tingling filled Rand. The heat had grown to a fever. He wanted to laugh, it felt so good. A small voice in his head shouted that something was wrong, but all he could think of was how full of energy he felt, nearly bursting with it. Smiling, he rocked on his heels and waited for what was going to happen. Vaguely, distantly, he wondered what it would be. The leader's face darkened. One of the others drew his sword enough for an inch of steel to show and spoke in a voice quivering with anger.
"When the children of the light ask questions, you gray-eyed bumpkin, we expect answers or—"
He cut off as the narrow-faced man threw an arm across his chest. Bornhold jerked his head up the street. The town watch had arrived. A dozen men in round steel caps and studded leather jerkins, carrying quarterstaffs, as if they knew how to use them. They stood watching, silently, from 10 paces off.
"This town has lost the light," growled the man, who had half-drawn his sword.
He raised his voice to shout at the watch.
"Berlon stands in the shadow of the Dark One!"
At a gesture from Bornhold, he slammed his blade back into its scabbard. Bornhold turned his attention back to Rand. The light of knowing burned in his eyes.
"Dark friends do not escape us, youngling, even in a town that stands in the shadow. We will meet again, you may be sure of it."
He spun on his heel and strode away, his two companions close behind as if Rand had ceased to exist. For the moment, at least. When they reached the crowded part of the street, the same seemingly accidental pocket as before opened around them. The watchmen hesitated, eyeing Rand, then shouldered their quarterstaffs and followed the white-cloaked three. They had to push their way into the crowd, shouting,
"Make way for the watch!"
Few did make way, except grudgingly. Rand still rocked on his heels, waiting. The tingle was so strong that he almost quivered. He felt as if he were burning up. Matt came out of the shop, staring at him.
"You aren't sick," he said finally. "You are crazy."
Rand drew a deep breath, and abruptly, it was all gone like a pricked bubble. He staggered as it vanished, the realization of what he had just done flooding in on him. Licking his lips, he met Matt's stare.
"I think we had better go back to the inn now," he said unsteadily.
"Yes," Matt said.
"Yes, I think we better had."
The street had begun to fill up again, and more than one passerby stared at the two boys and murmured something to a companion. Rand was sure the story would spread. A crazy man had tried to start a fight with three children of the light. That was something to talk about. Maybe the dreams are driving me crazy.
The two lost their way several times in the haphazard streets, but after a while they fell in with Tom Marilyn, making a grand procession all by himself through the throng. The gleeman said he was out to stretch his legs and for a bit of fresh air, but whenever anyone looked twice at his colorful cloak, he would announce in a resounding voice, "I am at the Stag and Lion, tonight only." It was Matt who began disjointedly telling Tom about the dream and their worry over whether or not to tell Moraine. But Rand joined in, for there were differences in exactly how they remembered it. Or maybe each dream was a little different, he thought. The major part of the dreams was the same, though. They had not gone far in the telling before Tom started paying full attention. When Rand mentioned Baalzamon, the gleeman grabbed them each by a shoulder with a command to hold their tongues, raised on tiptoe to look over the heads of the crowd, then hustled them out of the press to a dead-end alley that was empty, except for a few crates and a slat-ribbed yellow dog huddled out of the cold. Tom stared out at the crowd, looking for anyone stopping to listen, before turning his attention to Rand and Matt. His blue eyes bored into theirs, between flickering away to watch the mouth of the alley.
"Don't ever say that name where strangers can hear." His voice was low but urgent. "Not even where a stranger might hear. It is a very dangerous name. Even where children of the light are not wandering the streets."
Matt snorted. "I could tell you about children of the light," he said with a wry look at Rand. Tom ignored him.
"If only one of you had had this dream."
He tugged at his mustache furiously.
"Tell me everything you can remember about it. Every detail."
He kept up his wary watch while he listened.
"He named the men he said had been used," Rand said finally.
He thought he had told everything else.
"Gwer Amalasan, Rowland Darkspain, Davian," Matt added before he could go on, "and Urien Stonebow. And Loghain," Rand finished.
"Dangerous names," Tom muttered.
His eyes seemed to drill at them even more intently than before.
"Nearly as dangerous as that other, one way and another. All dead now, except for Loghain. Some long dead. Rowland Darkspain, nearly 2,000 years. But dangerous just the same. Best you don't say them aloud, even when you're alone. Most people wouldn't recognize a one of them, but if the wrong person overhears..."
"But who were they?" Rand said.
"Men," Tom murmured. "Men who shook the pillars of heaven and rocked the world on its foundations."
He shook his head.
"It doesn't matter. Forget about them. They are dust now."
Were they used, like he said? Matt asked. "And killed?"
"You might say the White Tower killed them. You might say that."
Tom's mouth tightened momentarily. Then he shook his head again.
"But used? No, I cannot see that. The Light knows the Amarin seat has enough plots going. But I can't see that."
Matt shivered.
"He said so many things. Crazy things. All that about Luz, Theron Kinslayer, and Ardo Hawkwing, and the Eye of the World. What in the light is that supposed to be?"
"A legend," the gleeman said slowly. "Maybe. As big a legend as the Horn of Valir, at least in the Borderlands. Up there, young men go hunting the Eye of the World, the way young men from Ilion hunt the Horn. Maybe a legend."
"What do we do, Tom?" Rand said. "Do we tell her? I don't want any more dreams like that. Maybe she could do something."
"Maybe we wouldn't like what she did," Matt growled. Tom studied them, considering and stroking his mustache with a knuckle.
"I say hold your peace," he said finally. "Don't tell anyone, for the time at least. You can always change your mind, if you have to, but once you tell, it's done, and you're tied up worse than ever with her."
Suddenly he straightened, his stoop almost disappearing.
"The other lad, you say he had the same dream. Does he have sense enough to keep his mouth shut?"
"I think so," Rand said, at the same time that Matt said. "We were going back to the inn to warn him."
"The lights end, we're not too late."
cloak flapping around his ankles, patches fluttering in the wind, Tom strode out of the alley, looking back over his shoulder without stopping.
"Well, are your feet pegged to the ground?"
Rand and Matt hurried after him, but he did not wait for them to catch up. This time he did not pause for people who looked at his cloak or those who hailed him as a gleeman either. He clove through the crowded streets as if they were empty, Rand and Matt half running to follow in his wake. In much less time than Rand expected, they were hurrying up to the Stag and Lion. As they started in, Perrin came speeding out, trying to throw his cloak around his shoulders as he ran. He nearly fell in his effort not to carom into them.
"I was coming looking for you two,"
he panted, when he had caught his balance. Rand grabbed him by the arm.
"Did you tell anyone about the dream?"
"Say that you didn't,"
Matt demanded.
"It's very important," Tom said.
Perrin looked at them in confusion.
"No, I haven't.
I didn't even get out of bed until less than an hour ago."
His shoulders slumped.
"I've given myself a headache trying not to think about it, much less talk about it."
"Why did you tell him?"
He nodded at the gleeman.
"We had to talk to somebody or go crazy," Rand said.
"I will explain later,"
Tom added, with a significant look at the people passing in and out of the Stag and Lion.
"All right,"
Perrin replied slowly, still looking confused. Suddenly, he slapped his head.
"You almost made me forget why I was looking for you. Not that I don't wish I could."
"Nynaeve is inside."
"Blood and ashes!" Matt yelped.
"How did she get here? Moraine? The fairy?"
Perrin snorted.
"You think a little thing like a sunken fairy could stop her? She rooted Hightower out. I don't know how he got back over the river. But she said he was hiding in his bedroom and didn't want to go near the river. Anyway, she bullied him into finding a boat big enough for her and her horse and rowing her across.
Himself.
She only gave him time to find one of his haulers to work another set of oars."
"Light,"
Matt breathed.
"What is she doing here?"
Rand wanted to know. Matt and Perrin both gave him a scornful look.
"She came after us," Perrin said. "She's with Mistress Alice right now, and it's cold enough in there to snow."
"Couldn't we just go somewhere else for a while?"
Matt asked.
"My Da says only a fool puts his hand in a hornet nest until he absolutely has to."
Rand cut in.
"She can't make us go back. Winter night should have been enough to make her see that. If she doesn't, we will have to make her."
Matt's eyebrows lifted higher with every word, and when Rand finished, he let out a low whistle.
"You ever try to make Nynaeve see something she doesn't want to see?"
"I have."
"I say we stay away till night and sneak in then."
"From my observation of the young woman," Tom said, "I don't think she will stop until she has had her say. If she is not allowed to have it soon, she might keep on until she attracts attention none of us wants."
That brought them all up short.
They exchanged glances, drew deep breaths, and marched inside as if to face Trollocs.
Chapter 16. The Wisdom.
Perrin led the way into the depths of the inn. Rand was so intent on what he intended to say to Nynaeve that he did not seem men until she seized his arm and pulled him to one side.
The others kept on a few steps down the hall before realizing he had stopped. Then they halted too, half impatient to go on, half reluctant to do so.
"We don't have time for that, boy,"
Tom said gruffly. Min gave the white-haired gleeman a sharp look.
"Go juggle something,"
she snapped, drawing Rand further away from the others.
"I really don't have time," Rand told her. "Certainly not for any more fool talk about escaping and the like."
He tried to get his arm loose, but every time he pulled free, she grabbed it again.
"And I don't have time for your foolishness either. Will you be still?"
She gave the others a quick look, then moved closer, lowering her voice.
"A woman arrived a little while ago, shorter than I, young, with dark eyes and dark hair and a braid down to her waist. She's part of it, right along with the rest of you."
For a minute, Rand just stared at her.
"Nynaeve? How can she be involved? Light, how can I be involved?"
"That's impossible."
"You know her,"
Min whispered.
"Yes, and she can't be mixed in whatever it is you—" "The sparks, Rand?"
She met Mistress Alice coming in, and there were sparks with just the two of them. Yesterday I couldn't see sparks without at least three or four of you together, but today it's all sharper and more furious.
She looked at Rand's friends, waiting impatiently, and shivered before turning back to him.
It's almost a wonder the inn doesn't catch fire. You're all in more danger today than yesterday, since she came.
Rand glanced at his friends. Tom, his brows drawn down in a bushy V, was leaning forward on the point of taking some action to hurry him along.
She won't do anything to hurt us, he told Min. I have to go now.
He succeeded in getting his arm back this time. Ignoring her squawk, he joined the others, and they started off again down the corridor. Rand looked back once. Min shook her fist at him and stamped her foot.
What did she have to say? Matt asked. Nynaeve is part of it, Rand said, without thinking,
then shot Matt a hard look that caught him with his mouth open. Then understanding slowly spread across Matt's face.
Part of what? Tom said softly. Does that girl know something?
While Rand was still trying to gather in his head what to say, Matt spoke up.
Of course she's part of it, he said grumpily. Part of the same bad luck we've been having since winter night. Maybe having the wisdom show up is no great affair to you, but I'd as soon have the white cloaks here myself.
She saw Nynaeve arrive, Rand said. Saw her talking to Mistress Alice, and thought she might have something to do with us.
Tom gave him a sidelong look and ruffled his mustaches with a snort, but the others seemed to accept Rand's explanation. He did not like keeping secrets from his friends, but Min's secret could be as dangerous for her as any of theirs was for them. Perrin stopped suddenly in front of a door, and despite his size, he seemed oddly hesitant. He drew a deep breath, looked at his companions, took another breath, then slowly opened the door and went in. One by one, the rest of them followed. Rand was the last, and he closed the door behind him with the utmost reluctance. It was the room where they had eaten the night before. A blaze crackled on the hearth, and a polished silver tray sat in the middle of the table holding a gleaming silver pitcher and cups. Moraine and Nynaeve sat at opposite ends of the table, neither taking her eyes from the other. All the other chairs were empty. Moraine's hands rested on the table, as still as her face. Nynaeve's braid was thrown over her shoulder, the end gripped in one fist. She kept giving it little tugs, the way she did when she was being even more stubborn than usual with the village council.
Perrin was right.
Despite the fire, it seemed freezing cold, and all coming from the two women at the table. Lan was leaning against the mantel, staring into the flames and rubbing his hands for warmth. Egwene, her back flat against the wall, had her cloak on with the hood pulled up. Tom, Matt, and Perrin stopped uncertainly in front of the door. Shrugging uncomfortably, Rand walked to the table.
Sometimes you have to grab the wolf by the ears, he reminded himself.
But he remembered another old saying, too.
When you have a wolf by the ears, it's as hard to let go as to hold on.
He felt Moraine's eyes on him, and Nynaeve's, and his face became hot, but he sat down anyway, halfway between the two. For a minute the room was as still as a carving, then Egwene and Perrin and finally Matt made their reluctant way to the table and took seats, toward the middle, with Rand. Egwene tugged her hood further forward, enough to half hide her face, and they all avoided looking at anyone.
Well, Tom snorted from his place beside the door. At least that much is done.
Since everyone is here, Lan said, leaving the fireplace and filling one of the silver cups with wine, perhaps you will finally take this.
He proffered the cup to Nynaeve. She looked at it suspiciously.
There is no need to be afraid, he said patiently.
You saw the innkeeper bring the wine, and neither of us has had a chance to put anything in it.
It is quite safe.
The wisdom's mouth tightened angrily at the word afraid, but she took the cup with a murmured,
Thank you.
I am interested, he said, in how you found us.
So am I, Moraine leaned forward intently. Perhaps you are willing to speak now that Egwene and the boys have been brought to you?
Nynaeve sipped the wine before answering the Aes Sedai.
There was nowhere for you to go except Berlong. To be safe, though, I followed your trail. You certainly cut back and forth enough, but then I suppose you would not care to risk meeting decent people.
You
"'Followed our trail,'
Lan said, truly surprised for the first time that Rand could remember. "'I must be getting careless.'
"'You left very little trace, but I can track as well as any man in the Two Rivers, except perhaps Tamall Thor.'
She hesitated, then added,
"'Until my father died, he took me hunting with him, and taught me what he would have taught the sons he never had.'
She looked at Lan challengingly, but he only nodded with approval.
"'If you can follow a trail I have tried to hide, he taught you well. Few can do that, even in the Borderlands.'
Abruptly, Nynaeve buried her face in her cup. Rand's eyes widened. She was blushing. Nynaeve never showed herself even the least bit disconcerted. Angry, yes. Outraged, often. But never out of countenance. But she was certainly red-cheeked now, and trying to hide in the wine.
"'Perhaps now,' Moraine said quietly, "'you will answer a few of my questions. "'I have answered yours freely enough.' "'With a great sack full of Gleeman's tales,' Nynaeve retorted. "'The only facts I can see are that four young people have been carried off, "'for the light alone knows what reason, by an Aes Sedai.'
"'You have been told that isn't known here,' Lan said sharply. "'You must learn to guard your tongue.'
"'Why should I?' Nynaeve demanded. "'Why should I help hide you, or what you are? "'I've come to take Egwene and the boys back to Women's Field.' Not help you spirit them away.
Tom broke in a scornful voice.
If you want them to see their village again, or you either, you had better be more careful. There are those in Berlon who would kill her, he jerked his head toward Moraine, for what she is. Him, too.
He indicated Lan, then abruptly moved forward to put his fists on the table. He loomed over Nynaeve, and his long mustaches and thick eyebrows suddenly seemed threatening. Her eyes widened, and she started to lean back, away from him. Then her back stiffened defiantly. Tom did not appear to notice. He went right on in an ominously soft voice.
They'd swarm over this inn like murderous ants on a rumor, a whisper. Their hate is that strong, their desire to kill or take any like these two. And the girl, the boys, you are all associated with them, enough for the white cloaks anyway. You wouldn't like the way they ask questions, especially when the White Tower is involved. White cloak questioners assume you're guilty before they start, and they have only one sentence for that kind of guilt. They don't care about finding the truth. They think they know that already. All they go after with their hot irons and pincers is a confession. Best you remember, some secrets are too dangerous for saying aloud, even when you think you know who hears.
He straightened with a muttered,
I seem to tell that to people often of late.
Well put, Gleeman, Lan said.
The warder had that weighing look in his eyes again.
I'm surprised to find you so concerned.
Tom shrugged.
It's known I arrived with you, too. I don't care for the thought of a questioner with a hot iron telling me to repent my sins and walk in the light.
That, Nynaeve put in sharply, is just one more reason for them to come home with me in the morning. Or this afternoon, for that matter. The sooner we're away from you and on our way back to Emmons Field, the better.
We can't,
Rand said, and was glad that his friends all spoke up at the same time.
That way Nynaeve's glare had to be spread around. She spared no one as it was. But he had spoken first, and they all fell silent, looking at him. Even Moraine sat back in her chair, watching him over steepled fingers. It was an effort for him to meet the wisdom's eyes. If we go back to Emmons Field, the Trollocs will come back too. They're hunting us. I don't know why, but they are. Maybe we can find out why in Tarvalen. Maybe we can find out how to stop it. It's the only way.
Nynaeve threw up her hands.
You sound just like Tam. He had himself carried to the village meeting and tried to convince everybody. He'd already tried with the village council. The light knows how your Mistress Alice,
she invested the name with a wagon load of scorn,
managed to make him believe. He has a mite of sense, usually, more than most men. In any case,
The Council is a pack of fools most of the time, but not foolish enough for that. And neither was anyone else. They agreed you had to be found. Then Tam wanted to be the one to come after you, and him not able to stand by himself. Foolishness must run in your family.
Matt cleared his throat, then mumbled,
What about my Da? What did he say? He's afraid you'll try your tricks with Outlanders and get your head thumped. He seemed more afraid of that than of Mistress Alice here, but then he was never much brighter than you.
Matt seemed unsure how to take what she had said, or how to reply, or even whether to reply.
I expect, Perrin began hesitantly, I suppose Master Luhan was not too pleased about my leaving either.
Did you expect him to be?
Nynaeve shook her head disgustedly and looked at Egwene.
Maybe I should not be surprised at this hare-brained idiocy from you three, but I thought others had more judgment.
Egwene sat back, so she was shielded by Perrin.
I left a note, she said faintly.
She tugged at the hood of her cloak as if she was afraid her unbound hair showed.
I explained everything.
Nynaeve's face darkened. Rand sighed. The wisdom was on the point of one of her tongue lashings, and it looked as if it might be a first-rate one. If she took a position in the heat of anger, if she said she intended to see them back in Emmons Field no matter what anybody said, for instance, she would be nearly impossible to budge. He opened his mouth.
A note!
Nynaeve began, just as Moraine said.
You and I must still talk, Wisdom.
If Rand could have stopped himself, he would have, but the words poured out as if it were a floodgate he had opened instead of his mouth.
All this is very well, but it doesn't change anything. We can't go back. We have to go on.
He spoke more slowly toward the end, and his voice sank, so he finished in a whisper, with the Wisdom and the Aes Sedai both looking at him. It was the sort of look he received if he came on women talking women's circle business, the sort that said he had stepped in where he did not belong. He sat back, wishing he was somewhere else.
Wisdom, Moraine said, you must believe that they are safer with me than they would be back in the Two Rivers.
Safer? Nynaeve tossed her head dismissively.
You are the one who brought them here, where the White Cloaks are. The same White Cloaks who, if the Gleeman tells the truth, may harm them because of you. Tell me how they are safer, Aes Sedai.
There are many dangers from which I cannot protect them, Moraine agreed, any more than you can protect them from being struck by lightning if they go home. But it is not lightning of which they must be afraid, nor even White Cloaks. It is the Dark One and minions of the Dark One. From those things I can protect. Touching the true source, touching Sidar, gives me that protection, as it does to every Aes Sedai. Nynaeve's mouth tightened skeptically. Moraine's grew tighter, too, with anger, but she went on, her voice hard on the edge of patience.
Even those poor men who find themselves wielding the power for a short time gain that much, though sometimes touching Sidine protects, and sometimes the taint makes them more vulnerable. But I, or any Aes Sedai, can extend my protection to those close by me. No Fade can harm them as long as they are as close to me as they are right now. No Trolloc can come within a quarter of a mile without Lan knowing it, feeling the evil of it. Can you offer them half as much if they return to Emmons Field with you? You stand up straw men, Nynaeve said. We have a saying in the Two Rivers. Whether the bear beats the wolf, or the wolf beats the bear, the rabbit always loses. Take your contest somewhere else, and leave Emmons Field folk out of it.
Egwene, Moraine said after a moment, take the others and leave the Wisdom alone with me for a while. Her face was impassive. Nynaeve squared herself at the table as if getting ready for an all-in wrestling match. Egwene bounced to her feet, her desire to be dignified, obviously warring with her desire to avoid a confrontation with the Wisdom over her unbraided hair. She had no difficulty gathering up everyone by eye, though. Matt and Perrin scraped back their chairs hurriedly, making polite murmurs while trying not to actually run on their way out. Even Lan started for the door at a signal from Moraine, drawing Tom with him. Rand followed, and the warder shut the door behind them, then took up guard across the hallway.
Under Lan's eyes, the others moved on down the hall a short distance. They were not to be allowed even the slightest chance of eavesdropping. When they had gone far enough to suit him, Lan leaned back against the wall. Even without his color-shifting cloak, he was so still that it would be easy not to notice him until you were right on him. The gleeman muttered something about better things to do with his time and left with a stern,
"Remember what I said,"
over his shoulder to the boys. No one else seemed inclined to leave.
"What did he mean?"
Egwene asked absently, her eyes on the door that hid Moraine and Nynaeve. She kept fiddling with her hair as if torn between continuing to hide the fact that it was no longer braided and pushing back the hood of her cloak.
"He gave us some advice," Matt said.
Perrin gave him a sharp look. "He said not to open our mouths until we were sure what we were going to say."
"That sounds like good advice,"
Egwene said, but clearly she was not really interested. Rand was engrossed in his own thoughts. How could Nynaeve possibly be part of it? How could any of them be involved with Trollocs and Fades and Baalzamon appearing in their dreams? It was crazy. He wondered if Min had told Moraine about Nynaeve.
What are they saying in there?
He had no idea how long he had been standing there when the door finally opened. Nynaeve stepped out and gave a start when she saw Lan. The warder murmured something that made her toss her head angrily, then he slipped past her through the door. She turned toward Rand, and for the first time he realized the others had all quietly disappeared. He did not want to face the wisdom alone, but he could not get away now that he had met Nynaeve's eye.
A particularly searching eye, he thought, puzzled. What did they say?
He drew himself up as she came closer. She indicated Tam's sword.
That seems to fit you now, though I would like it better if it did not. You've grown, Rand.
In a week? He laughed, but it sounded forced, and she shook her head as if he did not understand.
Did she convince you? He asked. It really is the only way.
He paused, thinking of Min's sparks.
Are you coming with us?
Nynaeve's eyes opened wide.
Coming with you? Why would I do that? Mavra Mullen came up from Devon Rye to see to things till I return, but she'll be wanting to get back as soon as she can. I still hope to make you see sense and come home with me. We can't.
He thought he saw something move at the still-open door, but they were alone in the hallway.
You told me that. And she did, too.
Nynaeve frowned.
If she wasn't mixed up in it. Aes Sedai are not to be trusted, Rand.
You sound as if you really do believe us, he said slowly.
What happened at the village meeting?
Nynaeve looked back at the doorway before answering. There was no movement there now.
It was a shambles, but there is no need for her to know we can't handle our affairs any better than that. And I believe only one thing. You are all in danger as long as you are with her. Something happened, he insisted. Why do you want us to go back if you think there's even a chance we are right? And why you at all? As soon send the mayor himself as the wisdom.
You have grown. She smiled, and for a moment her amusement had him shifting his feet.
I can think of a time when you would not have questioned where I chose to go or what I chose to do, wherever and whatever it was. A time just a week ago.
He cleared his throat and pressed on stubbornly.
It doesn't make sense. Why are you really here?
She half glanced at the still empty doorway, then took his arm.
Let's walk while we talk.
He let himself be led away, and when they were far enough from the door not to be overheard, she began again.
As I said, the meeting was a shambles. Everybody agreed someone had to be sent after you, but the village split into two groups. One wanted you rescued, though there was considerable argument over how that was to be done, considering that you were with the likes of her.
He was glad she was remembering to watch what she said.
The others believed Tam, he said. Not exactly, but they thought you shouldn't be among strangers either, especially not with someone like her. Either way, though, almost every man wanted to be one of the party. Tam and Bran Alvir, with the scales of office around his neck, and Harald Luhan, till Alsbet made him sit down. Even Send Bui. The light saved me from men who think with the hair on their chests. though I don't know as there are any other kind. She gave a hearty sniff and looked up at him, an accusing glance. At any rate, I could see it would be another day, perhaps more, before they came to any decision, and somehow I was sure we did not dare wait that long. So I called the women's circle together and told them what had to be done. I cannot say they liked it, but they saw the right of it. And that is why I am here, because the men around Emmons Field are stubborn woolheads. They're probably still arguing about who to send, though I left word I would take care of it. Nynaeve's story explained her presence, but it did nothing to reassure him. She was still determined to bring them back with her.
"What did she say to you in there?" he asked.
Moraine would surely have covered every argument, but if there was one she had missed, he would make it.
"More of the same," Nynaeve replied. "And she wanted to know about you boys, to see if she could reason out why you have attracted the kind of attention you have." She said.
She paused, watching him out of the corner of her eye.
She tried to disguise it, but most of all she wanted to know if any of you was born outside the Two Rivers.
His face was suddenly as taut as a drumhead. He managed a hoarse chuckle.
"She does think of some odd things. I hope you assured her we're all Emmons Field born."
"Of course," she replied. There had only been a heartbeat's pause before she spoke, so brief he would have missed it if he had not been watching for it. He tried to think of something to say, but his tongue felt like a piece of leather.
"She knows. She was the wisdom, after all, and the wisdom was supposed to know everything about everyone. If she knows, it was no fever dream. Oh, light, help me, Father."
"Are you all right?" Nynaeve asked.
"He said I wasn't his son. When he was delirious, with the fever. He said he found me. I thought it was just..."
His throat began to burn, and he had to stop.
"Oh, Rand."
She stopped and took his face in both hands. She had to reach up to do it.
"People say strange things in a fever. Twisted things. Things that are not true or real. Listen to me. Tamil Thor ran away seeking adventure when he was a boy no older than you. I can just remember when he came back to Emmons Field, a grown man with a red-haired Outlander wife, and a babe in swaddling clothes. I remember Kariel Thor cradling that child in her arms with as much love given and delight taken as I have ever seen from any woman with a babe. Her child, Rand. You. Now you straighten up and stop this foolishness." "Of course," he said. "I was born outside the Two Rivers." "Of course."
Maybe Tam had been having a fever dream, and maybe he had found a baby after a battle.
"Why didn't you tell her?" "It is none of any Outlander's business." "Were any of the others born outside?"
As soon as the question was out, he shook his head.
"No, don't answer. It's none of my business either."
But it would have been nice to know if Moraine had some special interest in him over and above what she had in the whole lot of them. Would it?
"No, it isn't your business," Nynaeve agreed. "It might not mean anything. She could just be searching blindly for a reason, any reason, why those things are after you. After all of you."
Rand managed a grin.
"Then you believe they're chasing us?"
Nynaeve shook her head wryly.
"You've certainly learned how to twist words since you met her."
"What are you going to do?" he asked. She studied him. He met her eyes steadily.
"Today I'm going to have a bath. For the rest, we will have to see, won't we?"
Chapter 17. Watchers and Hunters. After the wisdom left him, Rand made his way to the common room. He needed to hear people laughing, to forget what Nynaeve had said and the trouble she might cause alike. The room was crowded indeed, but no one was laughing, though every chair and bench was filled and people lined the walls. Tom was performing again, standing on a table against the far wall, his gestures grand enough to fill the big room. It was the great hunt of the horn again, but no one complained, of course. There were so many tales to be told about each of the hunters, and so many hunters to tell of, that no two tellings were ever the same. The whole of it in one telling would have taken a week or more. The only sound competing with the gleeman's voice and harp was the crackling of the fires in the fireplaces.
To the eight corners of the world the hunters ride, to the eight pillars of heaven, where the winds of time blow and fate seizes the mighty and the small alike by the forelock. Now, the greatest of the hunters is Rogash of Talmor, Rogash Eagle-Eye. Famed at the court of the High King, feared on the slopes of Shael Ghul.
Hunters were always mighty heroes, all of them. Rand spotted his two friends and squeezed onto a place Perrin made for him on the end of their bench. Kitchen smells drifting into the room reminded him that he was hungry, but even the people who had food in front of them gave it little attention. The maids, who should have been serving, stood entranced, clutching their aprons and looking at the gleeman, and nobody seemed to mind at all. Listening was better than eating, no matter how good the food.
Since the day of her birth has the Dark One marked Blaze as his own. But not of this mind is she. No dark friend, Blaze of Matuchin. Strong as the ash she stands, lithe as the willow branch, beautiful as the rose. Golden-haired Blaze. Ready to die before she yields. But hark! Echoing from the towers of the city, trumpets blare, brazen and bold. Her heralds proclaim the arrival of a hero at her court. Drums thunder and cymbals sing. Rogash Eagle-Eye comes to do homage.
The bargain of Rogash Eagle-Eye wound its way to an end, but Tom paused only to wet his throat for a mug of ale before launching into Leon's stand. In turn, that was followed by the fall of Aleth Loriel, and Gaidel Kane's sword, and the last ride of Buad of Albane. The pauses grew longer as the evening wore on, and when Tom exchanged the harp for his flute, everyone knew it was the end of storytelling for the night. Two men joined Tom, with a drum and a hammered dulcimer, but sitting beside the table while he remained atop it. The three young men from Emmonsfield began clapping their hands with the first note of The Wind That Shakes the Willow. And they were not the only ones. It was a favorite in the Two Rivers, and in Berelon too, it seemed. Here and there, voices even took up the words, not so off-key as for anyone to hush them. My love is gone, carried away by the wind that shakes the willow, and all the land is beaten hard by the wind that shakes the willow. But I will hold her close to me in heart and dearest memory, and with her strength to steel my soul, her love to warm my heartstrings, I will stand where we once sang, The Cold Wind Shakes the Willow. The second song was not so sad. In fact, only one bucket of water seemed even more merry than usual by comparison, which might have been the gleeman's intent. People rushed to clear tables from the floor to make room for dancing, and began kicking up their heels until the walls shook from the stomping and whirling. The first dance ended with laughing dancers leaving the floor holding their sides and new people taking their places. Tom played the opening notes of Wild Geese on the Wing, then paused for people to take their places for the reel.
I think I'll try a few steps, Rand said, getting to his feet.
Perrin popped up right behind him. Matt was the last to move and so found himself staying behind to guard the cloaks, along with Rand's sword and Perrin's axe.
Remember, I want to turn too, Matt called after them.
The dancers formed two long lines facing each other, men in one, women in the other. First the drum and then the dulcimer took up the beat, and all the dancers began bending their knees in time. The girl across from Rand, her dark hair in braids that made him think of home, gave him a shy smile, and then a wink that was not shy at all. Tom's flute leaped into the tune, and Rand moved forward to meet the dark-haired girl. She threw back her head and laughed as he spun her around and passed her on to the next man in line. Everyone in the room was laughing, he thought, as he danced around his next partner, one of the serving maids with her apron flapping wildly. The only unsmiling face he saw was on a man huddled by one of the fireplaces, and that fellow had a scar that crossed his whole face from one temple to the opposite jaw, giving his nose a slant and drawing the corner of his mouth down. The man met his gaze and grimaced, and Rand looked away in embarrassment. Maybe with that scar the fellow could not smile.
He caught his next partner as she spun and whirled her in a circle before passing her on. Three more women danced with him as the music gained speed. Then he was back with the first dark-haired girl for a fast promenade that changed the lines about completely. She was still laughing, and she gave him another wink. The scar-faced man was scowling at him. His step faltered, and his cheeks grew hot. He had not meant to embarrass the fellow. He really did not think he had stared. He turned to meet his next partner and forgot all about the man. The next woman to dance into his arms was Nynaeve. He stumbled through the steps, almost tripping over his own feet, nearly stepping on hers. She danced gracefully enough to make up for his clumsiness, smiling the while.
"I thought you were a better dancer," she laughed, as they changed partners.
He had only a moment to gather himself before they changed again, and he found himself dancing with Moraine. If he had thought he was stumble-footed with the wisdom, it was nothing to how he felt with the Aes Sedai. She glided across the floor smoothly, her gown swirling about her. He almost fell twice. She gave him a sympathetic smile, which made it worse rather than helping. It was a relief to go to his next partner in the pattern, even if it was Egwene. He regained some of his poise. After all, he had danced with her for years. Her hair still hung unbraided, but she had gathered it back with a red ribbon.
Probably couldn't decide whether to please Moraine or Nynaeve, he thought sourly.
Her lips were parted, and she looked as if she wanted to say something, but she never spoke, and he was not about to speak first. Not after the way she had cut off his earlier attempt in the private dining room. They stared at one another soberly and danced apart without a word. He was glad enough to return to the bench when the reel was done. The music for another dance, a jig, began while he was sitting down. Matt hurried to join in, and Perrin slid onto the bench as he was leaving.
"Did you see her?"
Perrin began before he was even seated.
"Did you?"
"Which one?" Rand asked. "The Wisdom or Mistress Alice?" "I danced with both of them."
"Mistress Alice, too?"
Perrin exclaimed.
"I danced with Nynaeve. I didn't even know she danced. She never does at any of the dances back home."
"I wonder," Rand said thoughtfully, "what the women's circle would say about the Wisdom dancing. Maybe that's why." Then the music and the clapping and the singing were too loud for any further talk. Rand and Perrin joined in the clapping as the dancers circled the floor. Several times he became aware of the scar-faced man staring at him. The man had a right to be touchy with that scar, but Rand did not see anything he could do now that would not make matters worse. He concentrated on the music and avoided looking at the fellow. The dancing and singing went on into the night. The maids finally did remember their duties. Rand was glad to wolf down some hot stew and bread. Everyone ate where they sat or stood. Rand joined in three more dances, and he managed his steps better when he found himself dancing with Nynaeve again and with Moraine as well. This time they both complimented him on his dancing, which made him stammer. He danced with Egwene again, too. She stared at him, dark-eyed and always seeming on the point of speaking, but never saying a word. He was just as silent as she, but he was sure he did not scowl at her, no matter what Matt said when he returned to the bench. Toward midnight, Moraine left. Egwene, after one harried look from the Aes Sedai to Nynaeve, hurried after her. The Wisdom watched them with an unreadable expression, then deliberately joined in another dance before she left too, with a look as if she had gained a point on the Aes Sedai. Soon Tom was putting his flute into its case and arguing good-naturedly with those who wanted him to stay longer. Lan came by to gather up Rand and the others. "We have to make an early start," the warder said, leaning close to be heard over the noise. "And we will need all the rest we can get."
"There's a fellow been staring at me," Matt said. "A man with a scar across his face. You don't think he could be one of the friends you warned us about?"
"Like this?" Rand said, drawing a finger across his nose to the corner of his mouth.
"He stared at me, too."
He looked around the room. People were drifting away, and most of those still left clustered around Tom.
"He's not here now."
"I saw the man," Lan said. "According to Master Fitch, he's a spy for the White Cloaks. He's no worry to us." Maybe he was not, but Rand could see something was bothering the warder. Rand glanced at Matt, who had the stiff expression on his face that always meant he was hiding something.
A White Cloak spy. Could Bornhald want to get back at us that much?
"We're leaving early," he said. "Really early?" Maybe they could be gone before anything came of it.
At first light, the warder replied.
As they left the common room, Matt singing snatches of song under his breath and Perrin stopping now and again to try out a new step he had learned, Tom joined them in high spirits. Lan's face was expressionless as they headed for the stairs.
"Where is Nynaeve sleeping?" Matt asked. "Master Fitch said we got the last rooms."
"She has a bed," Tom said dryly, "in with Mistress Alice and the girl."
Perrin whistled between his teeth, and Matt muttered,
"Blood and ashes. I wouldn't be in Egwene's shoes for all the gold in Camelon."
Not for the first time Rand wished Matt could think seriously about something for more than 2 minutes. Their own shoes were not very comfortable right then.
"I'm going to get some milk," he said.
Maybe it would help him sleep. Maybe I won't dream tonight. Lan looked at him sharply. "There's something wrong tonight. Don't wander far. And remember, we leave whether you are awake enough to sit in your saddle or have to be tied on." The warder started up the stairs, the others followed him. Their jollity subdued. Rand stood in the hall alone. After having so many people around, it was lonely indeed. He hurried to the kitchen, where a scullery maid was still on duty. She poured a mug of milk from a big stone crock for him. As he came out of the kitchen, drinking, a shape in dull black started toward him down the length of the hall, raising pale hands to toss back the dark cowl that had hidden the face beneath. The cloak hung motionless as the figure moved, and the face, a man's face but pasty white, like a slug under a rock, and eyeless. From oily black hair to puffy cheeks was as smooth as an eggshell. Rand choked, spraying milk.
"You are one of them, boy," the fade said, a hoarse whisper like a file softly drawn across bone.
Dropping the mug, Rand backed away. He wanted to run, but it was all he could do to make his feet take one halting step at a time. He could not break free of that eyeless face. His gaze was held and his stomach curdled. He tried to shout for help, to scream. His throat was like stone. Every ragged breath hurt. The fade glided closer, in no hurry. Its strides had a sinuous, deadly grace, like a viper, the resemblance emphasized by the overlapping black plates of armor down its chest. Thin, bloodless lips curved in a cruel smile, made more mocking by the smooth, pale skin where eyes should have been. The voice made Bornhald's seem warm and soft.
"Where are the others? I know they are here. Speak, boy, and I will let you live."
Rand's back struck wood, a wall or a door. He could not make himself look around to see which. Now that his feet had stopped, he could not make them start again. He shivered, watching the Murdrawl slither nearer. His shaking grew harder with every slow stride.
"Speak, I say, or—"
From above came a quick clatter of boots from the stairs up the hall, and the Murdrawl cut off, whirling. The cloak hung still. For an instant the fade's head tilted, as if that eyeless gaze could pierce the wooden wall. A sword appeared in a dead-white hand, blade as black as the cloak. The light in the hall seemed to grow dimmer in the presence of that blade. The pounding of boots grew louder, and the fade spun back to Rand, an almost boneless movement. The fade blade rose, narrow lips peeled back in a rictus snarl. Trembling, Rand knew he was going to die. Midnight steel flashed at his head and stopped.
"You belong to the great lord of the dark."
The breathy grating of that voice sounded like fingernails scratched across a slate.
"You are his."
Spinning in a black blur, the fade darted down the hall away from Rand. The shadows at the end of the hall reached out and embraced it, and it was gone. Lan leaped down the last stairs, landing with a crash, sword in hand. Rand struggled to find his voice.
"Fade," he gasped. "It was—"
Abruptly he remembered his sword. With the Murdrawl facing him, he had never thought of it. He fumbled the heron-marked blade out now, not caring if it was too late.
"It ran that way."
Lan nodded absently. He seemed to be listening to something else.
"Yes, it's going, fading. No time to pursue it now. We're leaving, sheepherder."
More boots stumbled down the stairs. Matt and Perrin and Tom hung about with blankets and saddlebags. Matt was still buckling his bedroll, with his bow awkward under his arm.
"Leaving?
Rand said. Sheathing his sword, he took his things from Tom.
Now? In the night?
You want to wait for the half-man to come back, sheepherder? The warder said impatiently. For half a dozen of them? It knows where we are now.
I'll ride with you again, Tom told the warder, if you have no great objections. Too many people remember that I arrived with you. I fear that before tomorrow this will be a bad place to be known as your friend. You can ride with us or ride to Shael Ghul, Gleeman.
Land's scabbard rattled from the force with which he rammed his sword home. A stableman came darting past them from the rear door, and then Moraine appeared with Master Fitch, and behind them Egwene, with her bundled shawl in her arms. And Nynaeve. Egwene looked frightened almost to tears, but the wisdom's face was a mask of cool anger.
You must take this seriously, Moraine was telling the innkeeper. You will certainly have trouble here by morning. Dark friends, perhaps. Perhaps worse. When it comes, quickly make it clear that we are gone. Offer no resistance. Just let whoever it is know that we left in the night, and they should bother you no further. It is us they are after.
Never you worry about trouble, Master Fitch replied jovially. Never a bit. If any come around my inn trying to make trouble for my guests, well, they'll get short shrift from the lads and I. Short shrift. And they'll hear not a word about where you've gone or when, or even if you are ever here. I've no use for that kind. Not a word will be spoken about you by any here. Not a word.
But,
Mistress Alice, I really must see to your horses if you're going to leave in good order.
He pulled loose from her grip on his sleeve and trotted in the direction of the stables. Moraine sighed vexedly.
Stubborn, stubborn man. He will not listen. You think Trollocs might come here hunting for us? Matt asked. Trollocs, Moraine snapped. Of course not. There are other things to fear, not the least of which is how we were found.
Ignoring Matt's bristle, she went right on.
The Fade cannot believe we will remain here, now that we know it has found us. But Master Fitch takes dark friends too lightly. He thinks of them as wretches hiding in the shadows. But dark friends can be found in the shops and streets of every city, and in the highest councils, too. The Murdral may send them to see if he can learn of our plans.
She turned on her heel and left, Lan close behind her. As they started for the stable yard, Rand fell in beside Nynaeve. She had her saddlebags and blankets, too.
So you're coming after all, he said. Min was right. Was there something down here?
She asked quietly.
She said it was...
She stopped abruptly and looked at him.
A fade, he answered.
He was amazed that he could say it so calmly.
It was in the hall with me, and then Lan came.
Nynaeve shrugged her cloak against the wind as they left the inn.
Perhaps there is something after you, but I came to see you safely back to Emmons Field, all of you, and I will not leave till that is done. I won't leave you alone with her sort.
Lights moved in the stables where the ostlers were saddling the horses.
Much!
The innkeeper shouted from the stable door where he stood with Moraine.
Stir your bones!
He turned back to her, appearing to attempt to soothe her rather than really listening when she spoke, though he did it deferentially, with bows interspersed among the orders called to the stablemen. The horses were led out, the stableman grumbling softly about the hurry and the lateness. Rand held Egwene's bundle, handing it up to her when she was on Bella's back. She looked back at him with wide, fear-filled eyes. At least she doesn't think it's an adventure anymore. He was ashamed as soon as he thought it. She was in danger because of him and the others. Even riding back to Emmons Field alone would be safer than going on.
Egwene, I...
The words died in his mouth. She was too stubborn to just turn back, not after saying she was going all the way to Tar Valon.
What about what Min saw? She's part of it. Light, part of what? Egwene,
he said.
I'm sorry. I can't seem to think straight anymore.
She leaned down to grip his hand hard. In the light from the stable he could see her face clearly. She did not look as frightened as she had. Once they were all mounted, Master Fitch insisted on leading them to the gates, the stablemen lighting the way with their lamps.
the round-bellied innkeeper, bowed them on their way with assurances that he would keep their secrets, and invitations to come again. Much watched them leave as sourly as he had watched them arrive. There was one, Rand thought, who would not give short shrift to anyone, or any kind of shrift. Much would tell the first person who asked him when they had gone, and everything else he could think of concerning them. A little distance down the street he looked back. One figure stood, lamp raised high, peering after them. He did not need to see the face to know it was Much. The streets of Bearlawn were abandoned at that hour of the night. Only a few faint glimmers here and there escaped tightly closed shutters, and the light of the moon in its last quarter waxed and waned with the wind-driven clouds. Now and again a dog barked as they passed an alleyway, but no other sound disturbed the night except their horses' hooves and the wind whistling across the rooftops. The riders held an even deeper silence, huddled in their cloaks and their own thoughts. The warder led the way, as usual, with Moraine and Egwene close behind. Nynaeve kept near the girl, and the others brought up the rear in a tight cluster. Lan kept the horses moving at a brisk walk. Rand watched the streets around them warily, and he noticed his friends doing the same. Shifting moon shadows recalled the shadows at the end of the hall, the way they had seemed to reach out to the fade. An occasional noise in the distance, like a barrel toppling or a dog barking, jerked every head around. Slowly, bit by bit, as they made their way through the town, they all bunched their horses closer to Lan's black stallion and Moraine's white mare. At the Camelin gate, Lan dismounted and hammered with his fist on the door of a small square stone building squatting against the wall. A weary watchman appeared, rubbing sleepily at his face. As Lan spoke, his sleepiness vanished, and he stared past the warder to the others.
"You want to leave?" he exclaimed. "Now? In the night? You must be mad!"
"Unless there is some order from the governor that prohibits our leaving," Moraine said. She had dismounted as well, but she stayed back from the door, out of the light that spilled into the dark street.
"Not exactly, mistress."
The watchman peered at her, frowning as he tried to make out her face.
"But the gates stay shut from sundown to sunup. No one to come in except in daylight. That's the order. Anyway, there are wolves out there. Killed a dozen cows in the last week. Could kill a man just as easy."
"No one to come in, but nothing about leaving," Moraine said, as if that settled the matter. "You see? We are not asking you to disobey the governor." Lan pressed something into the watchman's hand.
"For your trouble," he murmured.
"I suppose," the watchman said slowly.
He glanced at his hand. Gold glinted before he hastily stuffed it in his pocket.
"I suppose leaving wasn't mentioned at that. Just a minute."
He stuck his head back inside.
"Arendar, get out of here and help me open the gate. There's people want to leave. Don't argue, just do it."
Two more of the watch appeared from inside, stopping to stare in sleepy surprise at the party of eight waiting to leave. Under the first watchman's urgings, they shuffled over to heave at the big wheel that raised the thick bar across the gates, then turned their efforts to cranking the gates open. The crank and ratchet made a rapid clicking sound, but the well-oiled gates swung outward silently. Before they were even a quarter open, though, a cold voice spoke out of the darkness.
"What is this? Are these gates not ordered closed until sunrise?"
Five white-cloaked men walked into the light from the guardhouse door. Their cowls were drawn up to hide their faces, but each man rested his hand on his sword, and the golden suns on their left breasts were a plain announcement of who they were. Matt muttered under his breath. The watchmen stopped their cranking and exchanged uneasy looks.
"This is none of your affair,"
the first watchman said belligerently. Five white hoods turned to regard him, and he finished in a weaker tone.
"The children hold no sway here. The governor..."
"The children of the light," the white-cloaked man, who had first spoken, said softly, "hold sway wherever men walk in the light. Only where the shadow of the Dark One reigns are the children denied." "Yes?" He swung his hood from the watchman to Lan, then suddenly gave the warder a second, more wary look. The warder had not moved. In fact, he seemed completely at ease. But not many people could look at the children so uncaringly.
Lan's stony face could as well have been looking at a bootblack. When the white cloak spoke again, he sounded suspicious.
What kind of people want to leave town walls in the night during times like these? With wolves stalking the darkness and the Dark One's handiwork seen flying over the town.
He eyed the braided leather band that crossed Lan's forehead and held his long hair back.
A northerner, yes?
Rand hunched lower in his saddle.
A Drakkar.
It had to be that, unless the man just named anything he did not understand as the Dark One's handiwork. With a fate at the stag and lion, he should have expected a Drakkar, but at the moment, he was hardly thinking about it. He thought he recognized the White Cloak's voice.
Travelers, Lan replied calmly, of no interest to you or yours. Everyone is of interest to the Children of the Light.
Lan shook his head slightly.
Are you really after more trouble with the governor? He has limited your numbers in town, even had you followed.
What will he do when he discovers you harassing honest citizens at his gates?
He turned to the watchman.
Why have you stopped?
They hesitated, put their hands back on the crank, then hesitated again when the White Cloak spoke.
The governor does not know what happens under his nose. There is evil he does not see or smell, but the Children of the Light see.
The watchmen looked at one another, their hands opened and closed as if regretting the spears left inside the guardhouse.
The Children of the Light smell the evil.
The White Cloak's eyes turned to the people on horseback.
We smell it and root it out, wherever it is found.
Rand tried to make himself even smaller, but the movement drew the man's attention.
What have we here? Someone who does not wish to be seen? What do you... Ah!
The man brushed back the hood of his white cloak, and Rand was looking at the face he had known would be there. Bornhold nodded with obvious satisfaction.
Clearly, watchman, I have saved you from a great disaster. These are dark friends you were about to help escape from the light. You should be reported to your governor for discipline, or perhaps given to the questioners to discover your true intent this night.
He paused, eyeing the watchman's fear. It seemed to have no effect on him.
You would not wish that, no? Instead, I will take these ruffians to our camp that they may be questioned in the light. Instead of you, yes?
You will take me to your camp, White Cloak.
Moraine's voice came suddenly from every direction at once. She had moved back into the night at the children's approach, and shadows clumped around her.
You will question me?
Darkness wreathed her as she took a step forward. It made her seem taller.
You will bar my way?
Another step, and Rand gasped. She was taller, her head level with his, where he sat on the gray's back. Shadows clung about her face like thunderclouds.
Aes Sedai!
Bornhold shouted, and five swords flashed from their sheaths.
Die!
The other four hesitated, but he slashed at her in the same motion that cleared his sword. Rand cried out as Moraine's staff rose to intercept the blade. That delicately carved wood could not possibly stop hard-swung steel. Sword met staff, and sparks sprayed in a fountain, a hissing roar hurling Bornhold back into his white-cloaked companions. All five went down in a heap. Tendrils of smoke rose from Bornhold's sword on the ground beside him, blade bent at a right angle, where it had melted almost in two.
You dare attack me?
Moraine's voice roared like a whirlwind. Shadows spun in on her, draped her like a hooded cloak. She loomed as high as the town wall. Her eyes glared down, a giant staring at insects.
Go!
Lan shouted. In one lightning move, he snatched the reins of Moraine's mare and leaped into his own saddle.
Now!
He commanded. His shoulders brushed either gate as his stallion tore through the narrow opening like a flung stone. For a moment, Rand remained frozen, staring. Moraine's head and shoulders stood above the wall now. Watchmen and children alike cowered away from her, huddling with their backs against the front of the guardhouse. The Aes Sedai's face was lost in the night, but her eyes, as big as full moons, shone with impatience as well as anger when they touched him.
Swallowing hard, he booted Cloud in the ribs and galloped after the others.
50 paces from the wall, Lan drew them up, and Rand looked back.
Moraine's shadowed shape towered high over the log palisade, head and shoulders a deeper darkness against the night sky, surrounded by a silver nimbus from the hidden moon. As he watched, mouth hanging open, the Aes Sedai stepped over the wall. The gates began swinging shut frantically. As soon as her feet were on the ground outside, she was suddenly her normal size again.
"Hold the gates!"
an unsteady voice shouted inside the wall. Rand thought it was Bornhold.
"We must pursue them and take them!"
But the watchman did not slow the pace of closing. The gates slammed shut, and moments later the bar crashed into place, sealing them. Maybe some of those other white cloaks aren't as eager to confront an Aes Sedai as Bornhold. Moraine hurried to Aldeeb, stroking the white mare's nose once before she tucked her staff under the girth strap. Rand did not need to look this time to know there was not even a nick in the staff.
"You are taller than a giant,"
Egwene said breathlessly, shifting on Bella's back. No one else spoke, though Matt and Perrin edged their horses away from the Aes Sedai.
"Was I?"
Moraine said, absently, as she swung into her saddle.
"I saw you,"
Egwene protested.
"The mind plays tricks in the night. The eye sees what is not there."
"This is no time for games,"
Nynaeve began angrily, but Moraine cut her off.
"No time for games, indeed. What we gained at the Stag and Lion, we may have lost here."
She looked back at the gate and shook her head.
"If only I could believe the Drakkar was on the ground."
With a self-deprecatory sniff, she added,
"Or if only the Murdral were truly blind. If I am wishing, I might as well wish for the truly impossible. No matter. They know the way we must go, but with luck we will stay a step ahead of them.
Lan?"
The warder moved off eastward down the Camelin Road, and the rest followed close behind, hooves thudding rhythmically in the hard-packed earth. They kept to an easy pace, a fast walk the horses could maintain for hours without any Aes Sedai help. Before they had been even an hour on their way, though, Matt cried out, pointing back the way they had come.
"Look there!"
They all drew rein and stared. Flames lit the night over Bearlawn, as if someone had built a house-sized bonfire, tinting the undersides of the cloud with red. Sparks whipped into the sky in the wind.
"I warned him," Moraine said, "but he would not take it seriously."
Aldeeb danced sideways, an echo of the Aes Sedai's frustration.
"He would not take it seriously."
"The inn?" Perrin said. "That's the Stag and Lion? How can you be sure?"
"How far do you want to stretch coincidence?" Tom asked. "It could be the governor's house, but it isn't. And it isn't a warehouse, or somebody's kitchen stove, or your grandmother's haystack."
"Perhaps the light shines in us a little this night," Lan said, and Egwene rounded on him angrily.
"How can you say that? Poor Master Fitch's inn is burning. People may be hurt."
"If they have attacked the inn," Moraine said, "perhaps our exit from the town and my display went unnoticed."
"Unless that's what the Murdral wants us to think," Lan added. Moraine nodded in the darkness.
"Perhaps. In any case, we must press on. There will be little rest for anyone tonight."
"You say that so easily, Moraine," Nynaeve exclaimed. "What about the people at the inn? People must be hurt, and the innkeeper has lost his livelihood because of you. For all your talk about walking in the light, you're ready to go on without sparing a thought for him. His trouble is because of you."
"Because of those three," Lan said angrily. "The fire, the injured, the going on, all because of those three. The fact that the price must be paid is proof that it is worth paying. The Dark One wants those boys of yours, and anything he wants this badly he must be kept from. Or would you rather let the Fade have them?"
"Be at ease, Lan," Moraine said. "Be at ease." "Wisdom, you think I can help Master Fitch and the people at the inn? Well, you are right."
Nynaeve started to say something, but Moraine waved it away and went on.
"I can go back by myself and give some help. Not too much, of course. That would draw attention to those I helped. Attention they would not thank me for. especially with the Children of the Light in the town. And that would leave only Lan to protect the rest of you. He is very good. But it will take more than him if a Murdral and a Fist of Trollocs find you. Of course, we could all return, though I doubt I can get all of us back into Bearlawn unnoticed. And that would expose all of you to whomever set that fire, not to mention the White Cloaks. Which alternative would you choose, Wisdom, if you were I? I would do something, Nynaeve muttered unwillingly. And in all probability, hand the Dark One his victory, Moraine replied. Remember who it is that he wants. We are in a war, as surely as anyone in Giladan, though thousands fight there and only 8 of us here. I will have gold sent to Master Fitch, enough to rebuild the Stag and Lion. Gold that cannot be traced to Tarvalen, and help for any who were hurt as well. Any more than that will only endanger them. It is far from simple, you see. Lan?
The warder turned his horse and took up the road again.
From time to time, Rand looked back. Eventually, all he could see was the glow on the clouds, and then even that was lost in the darkness. He hoped Min was all right. All was still pitch dark when the warder finally led them off the packed dirt of the road and dismounted. Rand estimated there were no more than a couple of hours till dawn. They hobbled the horses, still saddled, and made a cold camp.
1 hour, Lan warned as everyone except him was wrapping up in their blankets. He would stand guard while they slept.
1 hour, and we must be on our way.
Silence settled over them.
After a few minutes, Matt spoke in a whisper that barely reached Rand.
I wonder what Dav did with that badger.
Rand shook his head silently, and Matt hesitated. Finally, he said,
I thought we were safe, you know, Rand? Not a sign of anything since we crossed the Tarn. And there we were in a city with walls around us. I thought we were safe. And then that dream, and a fade. Are we ever going to be safe again?
Not until we get to Tarvalen, Rand said. That's what she told us.
Will we be safe then? Perrin asked softly, and all three of them looked to the shadowy mound that was the Aes Sedai.
Land had melted into the darkness. He could have been anywhere. Rand yawned suddenly. The others twitched nervously at the sound.
I think we'd better get some sleep, he said. Staying awake won't answer anything.
Perrin spoke quickly.
She should have done something.
No one answered.
Rand squirmed onto his side to avoid a root, tried his back, then rolled off a stone onto his belly and another root.
It was not a good campsite they had stopped at, not like the spots the warder had chosen on the way north from the Tarn. He fell asleep, wondering if the roots digging into his ribs would make him dream, and woke at Lan's touch on his shoulder, ribs aching and grateful that if any dreams had come, he did not remember them. It was still the dark just before dawn, but once the blankets were rolled and strapped behind their saddles, Lan had them riding east again. As the sun rose, they made a bleary-eyed breakfast on bread and cheese and water, eating while they rode, huddled in their cloaks against the wind. All except Lan, that is. He ate, but he was not bleary-eyed, and he did not huddle. He had changed back into a shifting cloak, and it whipped around him, fluttering through grays and greens, and the only mind he paid it was to keep it clear of his sword arm. His face remained without expression, but his eyes searched constantly, as if he expected an ambush any moment.
Chapter 18. The Camelin Road. The Camelin Road was not very different from the North Road through the Two Rivers. It was considerably wider, of course, and showed the wear of much more use, but it was still hard-packed dirt, lined on either side by trees that would not have been at all out of place in the Two Rivers, especially since only the evergreens carried a leaf. The land itself was different, though, for by midday the road entered low hills. For 2 days the road ran through the hills, cut right through them sometimes, if they were wide enough to have made the road go much out of its way, and not so big as to have made digging through too difficult. As the angle of the sun shifted each day, it became apparent that the road, for all it appeared straight to the eye, curved slowly southward as it ran east.
Rand had daydreamed over Master Alvir's old map, half the boys in Emmons Field had daydreamed over it, and as he remembered, the road curved around something called the Hills of Abshire, until it reached Whitebridge. From time to time, Lan had them dismount atop one of the hills, where he could get a good view of the road both ahead and behind, and the surrounding countryside as well. The warder would study the view while the others stretched their legs or sat under the trees and ate.
"I used to like cheese," Egwene said on the third day after leaving Bearlawn.
She sat with her back to the bole of a tree, grimacing over a dinner that was once again the same as breakfast, as supper would be.
"Not a chance of tea. Nice hot tea."
She pulled her cloak tighter and shifted around the tree in a vain effort to avoid the swirling wind.
"Flatwort tea and andalay root," Nynaeve was saying to Moraine, "are best for fatigue. They clear the head and dim the burn in tired muscles."
"I am sure they do," the Aes Sedai murmured, giving Nynaeve a sidelong glance. Nynaeve's jaw tightened, but she continued in the same tone.
"Now, if you must go without sleep..."
"No tea," Lan said sharply to Egwene. "No fire. We can't see them yet, but they are back there somewhere. A fade or two and their trollocs, and they know we are taking this road. No need to tell them exactly where we are."
"I wasn't asking," Egwene muttered into her cloak, "just regretting."
"If they know we're on the road," Perrin asked, "why don't we go straight across to Whitebridge?"
"Even land cannot travel as fast cross-country as by road," Moraine said, interrupting Nynaeve, "especially not through the hills of Abshire."
The Wisdom gave an exasperated sigh. Rand wondered what she was up to. After ignoring the Aes Sedai completely for the first day, Nynaeve had spent the last two trying to talk to her about herbs. Moraine moved away from the Wisdom as she went on.
"Why do you think the road curves to avoid them? And we would have to come back to this road eventually, and we might find them ahead of us instead of following."
Rand looked doubtful, and Matt muttered something about the long way round. "Have you seen a farm this morning?" Lan asked. "Or even the smoke from a chimney?" "You haven't, because it's all wilderness from Bearlawn to Whitebridge. And Whitebridge is where we must cross the Arranel. That is the only bridge spanning the Arranel south of Maradon in Saldaea."
Tom snorted and blew out his mustaches.
"What is to stop them from having someone, something, at Whitebridge already?"
From the west came the keening wail of a horn. Lan's head whipped around to stare back down the road behind them. Rand felt a chill. A part of him remained calm enough to think, 10 miles, no more.
"Nothing stops them, Gleeman," the warder said. "We trust to the light and luck. But now we know for certain there are trollocs behind us."
Moraine dusted her hands. "It is time for us to move on." The Aes Sedai mounted her white mare. They set off a scramble for the horses, speeded by a second winding of the horn. This time others answered, the thin sounds floating out of the west like a dirge. Rand made ready to put Cloud to a gallop right away, and everyone else settled their reins with the same urgency. Everyone except Lan and Moraine. The warder and the Aes Sedai exchanged a long look.
"Keep them moving, Moraine Sedai," Lan said finally. "I will return as soon as I am able. You will know if I fail."
Putting a hand on Mondarb's saddle, he vaulted to the back of the black stallion and galloped down the hill, heading west. The horns sounded again.
"The light go with you, last lord of the Seven Towers," Moraine said almost too softly for Rand to hear.
Drawing a deep breath, she turned Aldeeb to the east.
"We must go on," she said, and started off at a slow, steady trot.
The others followed her in a tight file. Rand twisted once in his saddle to look for land, but the warder was already lost to sight among the low hills and leafless trees.
"Last Lord of the Seven Towers," she had called him. He wondered what that meant.
He had not thought anyone besides himself had heard, but Tom was chewing the ends of his mustaches, and he had a speculative frown on his face. The Gleeman seemed to know a great many things. The horns called and answered once more behind them. Rand shifted in his saddle. They were closer this time, he was sure of it. 8 miles, maybe 7. Matt and Egwene looked over their shoulders, and Perrin hunched as if he expected something to hit him in the back. Nynaeve rode up to speak to Moraine.
"Can't we go any faster?" she asked. Those horns are getting closer.
The Aes Sedai shook her head.
And why do they let us know they're there? Perhaps so we will hurry on without thinking of what might be ahead.
They kept on at the same steady pace. At intervals, the horns gave cry behind them, and each time the sound was closer. Rand tried to stop thinking of how close, but the thought came unbidden at every brazen wail. 5 miles, he was thinking anxiously, when Lan suddenly burst around the hill behind them at a gallop. He came abreast of Moraine, reining in the stallion.
At least 3 fists of Trollocs, each led by a halfman. Maybe 5.
If you were close enough to see them, Egwene said worriedly, they could have seen you. They could be right on your heels.
He was not seen.
Nynaeve drew herself up as everyone looked at her.
I have followed his trail, remember?
Hush, Moraine commanded. Lan is telling us there are perhaps 500 Trollocs behind us.
A stunned silence followed, then Lan spoke again. And they are closing the gap. They will be on us in an hour or less.
Half to herself, the Aes Sedai said, if they had that many before, why were they not used at Emmons Field? If they did not, how did they come here since?
They are spread out to drive us before them, Lan said, with scouts quartering ahead of the main parties.
Driving us toward what? Moraine mused.
As if to answer her, a horn sounded in the distance to the west. A low moan that was answered this time by others, all ahead of them. Moraine stopped Aldeeb. The others followed her lead, Tom and the Emmons Field folk looking around fearfully. Horns cried out before them and behind. Rand thought they held a note of triumph.
What do we do now? Nynaeve demanded angrily. Where do we go?
All that is left is north or south, Moraine said,
more thinking aloud than answering the wisdom.
To the south are the hills of Abshire, barren and dead, and the Tarran with no way to cross, and no traffic by boat. To the north we can reach the Aranel before nightfall, and there will be a chance of a trader's boat, if the ice has broken at Maradon.
There is a place the Trollocs will not go, Lan said, but Moraine's head whipped around sharply.
No.
She motioned to the warder, and he put his head close to hers so their talk could not be overheard. The horns winded, and Rand's horse danced nervously.
They're trying to frighten us, Tom growled, attempting to steady his mount.
He sounded half angry, and half as if the Trollocs were succeeding.
They're trying to scare us until we panic and run. They'll have us then.
Egwene's head swung with every blast of a horn, staring first ahead of them, then behind, as if looking for the first Trollocs. Rand wanted to do the same thing, but he tried to hide it. He moved Cloud closer to her.
We go north, Moraine announced.
The horns keened shrilly as they left the road and trotted into the surrounding hills. The hills were low, but the way was all up and down, with never a flat stretch, beneath bare-branched trees and through dead undergrowth. The horses climbed laboriously up one slope, only to canter down the other. Lan set a hard pace, faster than they had used in the road. Branches lashed Rand across the face and chest. Old creepers and vines caught his arms and sometimes snagged his foot right out of the stirrup. The keening horns came ever closer and ever more frequently. As hard as Lan pushed them, they were not getting farther on very quickly. They traveled 2 feet up or down for every one forward, and every foot was a scrambling effort. And the horns were coming nearer.
2 miles, he thought, maybe less.
After a time, Lan began peering first one way, then another, the hard planes of his face as close to worry as Rand had seen them. Once the warder stood in his stirrups to stare back the way they had come. All Rand could see were trees. Lan settled back into his saddle and unconsciously pushed back his cloak to clear his sword as he resumed searching the forest. Rand met Matt's eyes questioningly, but Matt only grimaced at the warder's back and shrugged helplessly. Lan spoke then over his shoulder.
There are Trollocs nearby.
They topped a hill and started down the other side.
Some of the scouts sent ahead of the rest, probably. If we come on them, stay with me at all costs, and do as I do. We must keep on the way we are going.
Blood and ashes,
Tom muttered. Nynaeve motioned to Egwene to keep close.
Scattered stands of evergreens provided the only real cover, but Rand tried to peer in every direction at once,
his imagination turning gray tree trunks caught out of the corner of his eye into Trollocs. The horns were closer, too. And directly behind them, he was sure of it. Behind and coming closer. They topped another hill. Below them, just starting up the slope, marched Trollocs carrying poles tipped with great loops of rope or long hooks. Many Trollocs. The line stretched far to either side, the ends out of sight. But at its center, directly in front of Lan, a fade road. The Murdral seemed to hesitate as the humans appeared atop the hill, but in the next instant it produced a sword with the black blade Rand remembered so queasily, and waved it over its head. The line of Trollocs scrambled forward. Even before the Murdral moved, Lan's sword was in his hand. "Stay with me," he cried, and Mondar plunged down the slope toward the Trollocs. "For the Seven Towers!" he shouted. Rand gulped and booted the Grey forward. The whole group of them streamed after the warder. He was surprised to find Tam's sword in his fist. Caught up by Lan's cry, he found his own. "Manetherin! Manetherin!" Perrin took it up. "Manetherin! Manetherin!" But Matt shouted, "Karayan Kaldazar! Karayan Alessandra! Al Alessandra!" The Matt's head turned from the Trollocs to the riders charging toward him. The black sword froze over its head, and the opening of its cowl swiveled, searching among the oncoming horsemen. Then Lan was on the Murdral as the human folk fell on the Trolloc line. Warder's blade met black steel from the forges of Thakandar with a clang like a great bell, the toll echoing in the hollow, a flash of blue light filling the air like sheet lightning. Beast-muzzled, almost men, swarmed around each of the humans, catch-poles and hooks flailing. Only Lan and the Murdral did they avoid. Those two fought in a clear circle, black horses matching step for step, swords matching stroke for stroke. The air flashed and peeled. Cloud rolled his eyes and screamed, rearing and lashing out with his hooves at the snarling, sharp-toothed faces surrounding him. Heavy bodies crowded shoulder to shoulder around him. Digging his heels in ruthlessly, Rand forced the Grey on regardless, swinging his sword with little of the skill Lan had tried to impart, hacking as if hewing wood. "Egwene!" Desperately he searched for her as he kicked the Grey onward, slashing a path through the hairy bodies as though chopping undergrowth. Moraine's white mare dashed and cut at the slightest touch of the Aes Sedai's hands on the reins. Her face was as hard as Lan's as her staff lashed out. Flame enveloped Trollocs, then burst with a roar that left misshapen forms unmoving on the ground. Nynaeve and Egwene rode close to the Aes Sedai with frantic urgency, teeth barred almost as fiercely as the Trollocs, belt knives in hand. Those short blades would be no use at all if a Trolloc came close. Rand tried to turn Cloud toward them, but the Grey had the bit in his teeth. Screaming and kicking, Cloud struggled forward however hard Rand tugged at the reins. Around the three women, a space opened as Trollocs tried to flee from Moraine's staff, but as they attempted to avoid her, she sought them out. Fires roared and the Trollocs howled in rage and fury. Above the roar and howl crashed the tolling of the warder's sword against the Murdrals. The air flared blue around them, flared again, again. A noose on the end of a pole swept at Rand's head. With an awkward slash, he cut the catchpole in two, then hacked the goat-faced Trolloc that held it. A hook caught his shoulder from behind and tangled in his cloak, jerking him backwards. Frantically, almost losing his sword, he clutched the pommel of his saddle to keep his seat. Cloud twisted, shrieking. Rand hung on to saddle and reins desperately. He could feel himself slipping, inch by inch, falling to the hook. Cloud swung around. For an instant, Rand saw Perrin, half out of his saddle, struggling to wrest his axe away from three Trollocs. They had him by one arm and both legs. Cloud plunged, and only Trollocs filled Rand's eyes. A Trolloc dashed in and seized Rand's leg, forcing his foot free of the stirrup. Panting, he let go of the saddle to stab it. Instantly, the hook pulled him out of the saddle to Cloud's hindquarters. His death grip on the reins was all that kept him from the ground. Cloud reared and shrieked, and in that same moment, the pulling vanished. The Trolloc at his leg threw up its hands and screamed. All of the Trollocs screamed, a howl like all the dogs in the world gone mad. Around the humans, Trollocs fell writhing to the ground, tearing at their hair, clawing their own faces. All of the Trollocs, biting at the ground, snapping at nothing, howling, howling, howling. Then Rand saw the Murdral.
Still upright in the saddle of its madly dancing horse, black sword still flailing, it had no head.
"It won't die until nightfall,"
Tom had to shout between heavy breaths over the unrelenting screams.
"Not completely. That is what I've heard, anyway."
"Ride!"
Lan shouted angrily. The warder had already gathered Moraine and the other two women and had them halfway up the next hill.
"This is not all of them!"
Indeed, the horns dirged again, above the shrieks of the Trollocs on the ground, to east and west and south. For a wonder, Matt was the only one who had been unhorsed. Rand trotted toward him, but Matt tossed a noose away from him with a shudder, gathered his bow, and scrambled into his saddle unaided, though rubbing at his throat. The horns bayed like hounds with the scent of a deer. Hounds closing in. If Lan had set a hard pace before, he doubled it now, till the horses scrabbled uphill faster than they had gone down before, then nearly threw themselves at the other side. But still the horns came nearer, until the guttural shouts of pursuit were heard whenever the horns paused, until eventually the humans reached a hilltop just as Trollocs appeared on the next hill behind them. The hilltop blackened with Trollocs, snouted, distorted faces howling, and three Myrdral overawed them all. Only 100 spans separated the two parties. Rand's heart shriveled like an old grape.
Three.
The Myrdral's black swords rose as one. Trollocs boiled down the slope, thick, triumphant cries rising, catchpoles bobbing above as they ran. Moraine climbed down from Aldeeb's back. Calmly, she removed something from her pouch, unwrapped it. Rand glimpsed dark ivory. The Ungrial. With Ungrial in one hand and staff in the other, the Aes Sedai set her feet, facing the onrushing Trollocs and the Fade's black swords, raised her staff high, and stabbed it down into the earth. The ground rang like an iron kettle struck by a mallet. The hollow clang dwindled, faded away. For an instant then, it was silent. Everything was silent. The wind died. The Trolloc cries stilled. Even their charge forward slowed and stopped. For a heartbeat, everything waited. Slowly the dull ringing returned, changing to a low rumble, growing until the earth moaned. The ground trembled beneath Cloud's hooves. This was Aes Sedai work like the stories told about. Rand wished he were 100 miles away. The tremble became a shaking that set the trees around them quivering. The gray stumbled and nearly fell. Even Mondarb and riderless Aldeeb staggered as if drunk, and those who rode had to cling to reins and manes, to anything, to keep their seats. The Aes Sedai still stood as she had begun, holding the Ungrial and her upright staff thrust into the hilltop. And neither she nor the staff moved an inch, for all that the ground shook and shivered around her. Now the ground rippled, springing out from in front of her staff, lapping toward the Trollocs like ripples on a pond, ripples that grew as they ran, toppling old bushes, flinging dead leaves into the air, growing, becoming waves of earth, rolling toward the Trollocs. Trees in the hollow lashed like switches in the hands of small boys. On the far slope, Trollocs fell in heaps, tumbled over and over by the raging earth. Yet, as if the ground were not rearing all around them, the Myrdral moved forward in a line, their dead black horses never missing a step, every hoof in unison. Trollocs rolled on the ground all about the black steeds, howling and grabbing at the hillside that heaved them up, but the Myrdral came slowly on. Moraine lifted her staff, and the earth stilled, but she was not done. She pointed to the hollow between the hills, and flame gouted from the ground, a fountain 20 feet high. She flung her arms wide, and the fire raced to left and right as far as the eye could see, spreading into a wall separating humans and Trollocs. The heat made Rand put his hands in front of his face, even on the hilltop. The Myrdral's black mounts, whatever strange powers they had, screamed at the fire, reared and fought their riders as the Myrdral beat at them, trying to force them through the flames.
"Blood and ashes," Matt said faintly.
Rand nodded numbly. Abruptly, Moraine wavered and would have fallen had Lan not leaped from his horse to catch her.
"Go on,"
he told the others. The harshness of his voice was at odds with the gentle way he lifted the Aes Sedai to her saddle.
"That fire won't burn forever.
Hurry! Every minute counts!
The wall of flame roared as if it would indeed burn forever, but Rand did not argue. They galloped northward as fast as they could make their horses go. The horns in the distance shrilled out disappointment, as if they already knew what had happened. Then fell silent. Lan and Moraine soon caught up with the others, though Lan led Aldeeb by the reins while the Aes Sedai swayed and held the pommel of her saddle with both hands.
"I will be all right soon," she said to their worried looks.
She sounded tired, yet confident, and her gaze was as compelling as ever.
"I am not at my strongest when working with earth and fire. A small thing."
The two of them moved into the lead again at a fast walk. Rand did not think Moraine could stay in the saddle at any faster pace. Nynaeve rode forward beside the Aes Sedai, steadying her with a hand. For a time, as the party went on across the hills, the two women whispered. Then the wisdom delved into her cloak and handed a small packet to Moraine. Moraine unfolded it and swallowed the contents. Nynaeve said something more, then fell back with the others, ignoring their questioning looks. Despite their circumstances, Rand thought she had a slight look of satisfaction. He did not really care what the wisdom was up to. He rubbed the hilt of his sword continually, and whenever he realized what he was doing, he stared down at it in wonder.
So that's what a battle is like.
He could not remember much of it, not any particular part. Everything ran together in his head, a melted mass of hairy faces and fear. Fear and heat. It had seemed as hot as a midsummer noon while it was going on. He could not understand that. The icy wind was trying to freeze beads of perspiration all over his face and body. He glanced at his two friends. Matt was scrubbing sweat off his face with the edge of his cloak. Perrin, staring at something in the distance and not liking what he was seeing, appeared unaware of the beads glistening on his forehead. The hills grew smaller, and the land began to level out, but instead of pressing on, land stopped. Nynaeve moved as if to rejoin Moraine, but the warder's look kept her away. He and the Aes Sedai rode ahead and put their heads together, and from Moraine's gestures it became apparent they were arguing. Nynaeve and Tom stared at them, the wisdom frowning worriedly, the gleeman muttering under his breath and pausing to stare back the way they had come. But everyone else avoided looking at them altogether. Who knew what might come out of an argument between an Aes Sedai and a warder? After a few minutes, Egwene spoke to Rand quietly, casting an uneasy eye at the still arguing pair.
"Those things you were shouting at the Trollocs."
She stopped as if unsure how to proceed.
"What about them?"
Rand asked. He felt a little awkward. War cries were all right for warders. Two Rivers folk did not do things like that, whatever Moraine said. But if she made fun of him over it... Matt must have repeated that story 10 times.
"And badly," Tom put in.
Matt grunted in protest.
"However he told it," Rand said. "We've all heard it any number of times. Besides, we had to shout something. I mean, that's what you do at a time like that. You heard Lan."
"And we have a right," Perrin added thoughtfully. "Moraine says we're all descended from those Manetharan people. They fought the Dark One, and we're fighting the Dark One. That gives us a right." Egwene sniffed as if to show what she thought of that.
"I wasn't talking about that. What was it you were shouting, Matt?"
Matt shrugged uncomfortably.
"I don't remember."
He stared at them defensively.
"Well, I don't. It's all foggy. I don't know what it was, or where it came from, or what it means."
He gave a self-deprecating laugh.
"I don't suppose it means anything." I think it does," Egwene said slowly. "When you shouted, I thought, just for a minute, I thought I understood you. But it's all gone now."
She sighed and shook her head.
"Perhaps you're right. Strange what you can imagine at a time like that, isn't it?"
"Karai on Kaldazar,"
Moraine said. They all twisted to stare at her.
"Karai on Elisande. Al Elisande. For the honor of the Red Eagle. For the honor of the Rose of the Sun. The Rose of the Sun. The ancient war cry of Manetharan, and the war cry of its last king. Eldraine was called the Rose of the Sun."
Moraine's smile took in Egwene and Matt both, though her gaze may have rested a moment longer on him than on her.
The blood of Ared's line is still strong in the two rivers. The old blood sings.
Matt and Egwene looked at each other while everyone else looked at them both. Egwene's eyes were wide and her mouth kept quirking into a smile that she bit back every time it began, as if she was not quite sure just how to take this talk of the old blood. Matt was sure from the scowling frown on his face. Rand thought he knew what Matt was thinking, the same thing he was thinking. If Matt was a descendant of the ancient kings of Monethrin, maybe the Trollocs were really after him and not all three of them. The thought made him ashamed. His cheeks colored, and when he caught a guilty grimace on Perrin's face, he knew Perrin had been having the same thought.
"I can't say that I have ever heard the like of this," Tom said after a minute.
He shook himself and became brusque.
"Another time I might even make a story out of it. But right now... Do you intend to remain here for the rest of the day, Aes Sedai?"
"No," Moraine replied, gathering her reins. A Trolloc horn keened from the south as if to emphasize her word. More horns answered, east and west. The horses whickered and sidled about nervously.
"They have passed the fire," Lan said calmly. He turned to Moraine. "You are not strong enough for what you intend. Not yet. Not without rest. And neither Myrdral nor Trolloc will enter that place."
Moraine raised a hand as if to cut him off, then sighed and let it fall instead.
"Very well," she said irritably. "You are right, I suppose, but I would rather there was any other choice."
She pulled her staff from under the girth strap of her saddle.
"Gather in around me, all of you, as close as you can. Closer."
Rand urged Cloud near the Aes Sedai's mare. At Moraine's insistence, they kept on crowding closer in a circle around her, until every horse had its head stretched over the croup or withers of another. Only then was the Aes Sedai satisfied. Then, without speaking, she stood in the stirrups and swung her staff over their heads, stretching to make certain it covered everyone. Rand flinched each time the staff passed over him. A tingle ran through him with every pass. He could have followed the staff without seeing it just by following the shivers as it moved over people. It was no surprise to him that Lan was the only one not affected. Abruptly, Moraine thrust the staff out to the west. Dead leaves whirled into the air and branches whipped as if a dust devil ran along the line she pointed to. As the invisible whirlwind vanished from sight, she settled back into her saddle with a sigh.
"To the Trollocs," she said, "our scents and our tracks will seem to follow that. The Myrdraw will see through it in time, but by then..."
"By then," Lan said, "we will have lost ourselves."
"Your staff is very powerful," Egwene said, earning a sniff from Nynaeve.
Moraine made a clicking sound.
"I have told you, child, things do not have power. The one power comes from the true source, and only a living mind can wield it. This is not even an Ungrial, merely an aid to concentration."
Wearily, she slid the staff back under her girth strap.
"Lan?"
"Follow me," the warder said, "and keep quiet. It will ruin everything if the Trollocs hear us."
He led the way north again, not at the crashing pace they had been making, but rather in the quick walk with which they had traveled the Camelin Road. The land continued to flatten, though the forest remained as thick. Their path was no longer straight as it had been before, for Lan chose a route that meandered over hard ground and rocky outcrops, and he no longer let them force their way through tangles of brush, instead taking the time to make their way around. Now and again he dropped to the rear, intently studying the trail they made. If anyone so much as coughed, it drew a sharp grunt from him. Nynaeve rode beside the Aes Sedai, concern battling dislike on her face. And there was a hint of something more, Rand thought, almost as if the wisdom saw some goal in sight. Moraine's shoulders were slumped, and she held her reins in the saddle with both hands, swaying with every step Aldeeb took. It was plain that laying the false trail, small as that might have seemed beside producing an earthquake and a wall of flame, had taken a great deal out of her, strength she no longer had to lose. Rand almost wished the horns would start again. At least they were a way of telling how far back the Trollocs were, and the Fades. He kept looking behind them, and so was not the first to see what lay ahead. When he did, he stared perplexed.
A great irregular mass stretched off to either side out of sight, in most places as high as the trees that grew right up to it, with even taller spires here and there. Leafless vines and creepers covered it, all in thick layers. A cliff? The vines will make climbing easy, but we'll never get the horses up. Suddenly, as they rode a little closer, he saw a tower. It was clearly a tower, not some kind of rock formation, with an odd pointed dome on the top. A city, he said. And a city wall and the spires were guard towers on the wall. His jaw dropped. It had been 10 times as big as Bearlawn, 50 times as big. Matt nodded. A city, he agreed. But what's a city doing in the middle of a forest like this? And without people, Perrin said. When they looked at him, he pointed to the wall. Would people let vines grow over everything like that? You know how creepers can tear down a wall. Look how it's fallen. What Rand saw adjusted itself in his mind again. It was as Perrin said. Under almost every low space in the wall was a brush-covered hill, rubble from the collapsed wall above. No two of the guard towers were the same height. I wonder what city it was, Egwene mused. I wonder what happened to it. I don't remember anything from Papa's map. It was called Aridhol, Moraine said. In the days of the Trolloc Wars, it was an ally of Manetherin. Staring at the massive walls, she seemed almost unaware of the others, even of Nynaeve, who supported her in the saddle with a hand on her arm. Later, Aridhol died, and this place was called by another name.
What name? Matt asked.
Here, Lan said. He stopped Mondarb in front of what had once been a gate wide enough for 50 men to march through abreast. Only the broken, vine-encrusted watchtowers remained. Of the gates there was no sign. We enter here. Trolloc horns shrieked in the distance. Lan peered in the direction of the sound, then looked at the sun, halfway down toward the treetops in the west. They have discovered it's a false trail. Come, we must find shelter before dark.
What name?
Matt asked again. Moraine answered as they rode into the city.
Shadar Logoth, she said. It was called Shadar Logoth.
Chapter 19. Shadows Waiting. Broken paving stones crunched under the horses' hooves as Lan led the way into the city. The entire city was broken, what Rand could see of it, and as abandoned as Perrin had said. Not so much as a pigeon moved, and weeds, mainly old and dead, sprouted from cracks in walls as well as pavement. More buildings had roofs fallen in than had them whole. Tumbled walls spilled fans of brick and stone into the streets. Towers stopped, abrupt and jagged like broken sticks. Uneven rubble hills, with a few stunted trees growing on their slopes, could have been the remains of palaces or of entire blocks of the city. Yet what was left standing was enough to take Rand's breath. The largest building in Bearlawn would have vanished in the shadows of almost anything here. Pale marble palaces topped with huge domes met him wherever he looked. Every building appeared to have at least one dome. Some had 4 or 5, and each one shaped differently. Long walks lined by columns ran hundreds of paces to towers that seemed to reach the sky. At every intersection stood a bronze fountain, or the alabaster spire of a monument, or a statue on a pedestal. If the fountains were dry, most of the spires toppled and many of the statues broken, what remained was so great that he could only marvel.
And I thought Bearlawn was a city. Burn me, but Tom must have been laughing up his sleeve. Moraine and Lan, too.
He was so caught up in staring that he was taken by surprise when Lan suddenly stopped in front of a white stone building that had once been twice as big as the Stag and Lion in Bearlawn. There was nothing to say what it had been when the city lived and was great, perhaps even an inn. Only a hollow shell remained of the upper floors. The afternoon sky was visible through empty window frames, glass and wood alike, long since gone. But the ground floor seemed sound enough. Moraine, hands still on the pommel, studied the building intently before nodding.
This will do.
Lan leaped from his saddle and lifted the Aes Sedai down in his arms. Bring the horses inside, he commanded. Find a room in the back to use for a stable. Move, farm boys. This isn't the village green. He vanished inside, carrying the Aes Sedai. Nynaeve scrambled down and hurried after him, clutching her bag of herbs and ointments. Egwene was right behind her. They left their mounts standing.
Bring the horses inside, Tom muttered wryly, and puffed out his mustaches.
He climbed down, stiff and slow, knuckled his back and gave a long sigh, then took Aldeeb's reins.
Well,
he said, lifting an eyebrow at Rand and his friends. They hurried to dismount and gathered up the rest of the horses. The doorway, without anything to say there had ever been a door in it, was more than big enough to get the animals through, even two abreast. Inside was a huge room as wide as the building, with a dirty tile floor and a few ragged wall hangings faded to a dull brown that looked as if they would fall apart at a touch. Nothing else. Land had made a place in the nearest corner for Moraine with his cloak and hers. Nynaeve, muttering about the dust, knelt beside the Aes Sedai, digging in her bag, which Egwene held open. I may not like her, it is true, Nynaeve was saying to the warder, as Rand, leading Bella and Cloud, came in behind Tom. But I help anyone who needs my help, whether I like them or not.
I made no accusation, Wisdom. I only said, have a care with your herbs.
She gave him a look from the corner of her eye.
The fact is, she needs my herbs, and so do you. Her voice was so acerbic to start, and grew more tart as she spoke. The fact is, she can only do so much, even with her one power. And she has done about as much as she can without collapsing. The fact is, your sword cannot help her now, Lord of the Seven Towers, but my herbs can.
Moraine laid a hand on Lan's arm.
Be at ease, Lan. She means no harm. She simply does not know.
The warder snorted derisively. Nynaeve stopped digging in her bag and looked at him, frowning. But it was to Moraine she spoke.
There are many things I don't know.
What thing is this?
For one, Moraine replied, all I truly need is a little rest. For another, I agree with you. Your skills and knowledge will be more useful than I thought. Now, if you have something that will help me sleep for an hour and not leave me groggy. A weak tea, a foxtail, Morrison, and...
Rand missed the last of it as he followed Tom into a room behind the first, a chamber just as big and even emptier. Here was only the dust, thick and undisturbed, until they came. Not even the tracks of birds or small animals marked the floor. Rand began to unsaddle Bella and Cloud, and Tom, Aldeeb and his gelding, and Perrin, his horse, and Mondarb. All but Matt. He dropped his reins in the middle of the room. There were two doorways from the room besides the one by which they had entered.
"Allie,"
Matt announced, drawing his head back in from the first. They could all see that much from where they were. The second doorway was only a black rectangle in the rear wall. Matt went through slowly and came out much faster, vigorously brushing old cobwebs out of his hair.
"Nothing in there,"
he said, giving the alleyway another look.
"You're going to take care of your horse?" Perrin said.
He had already finished his own and was lifting the saddle from Mondarb. Strangely, the fierce-eyed stallion gave him no trouble at all, though he did watch Perrin.
Nobody is going to do it for you.
Matt gave the alley one last look and went to his horse with a sigh. As Rand laid Bella's saddle on the floor, he noticed that Matt had taken on a glum stare. His eyes seemed 1,000 miles away, and he was moving by rote.
Are you all right, Matt?
Rand said. Matt lifted the saddle from his horse and stood holding it.
Matt? Matt?
Matt gave a start and almost dropped the saddle.
What? Oh, I was just thinking.
Thinking?
Perrin hooted from where he was replacing Mondarb's bridle with a hackamore.
You were asleep.
Matt scowled.
I was thinking about what happened back there. About those words I...
Everybody turned to look at him then, not just Rand, and he shifted uneasily.
Well, you heard what Moraine said. It's as if some dead man was speaking with my mouth. I don't like it.
His scowl grew deeper when Perrin chuckled.
Aemon's war cry, she said, right?
Maybe your Aemon come back again. The way you go on about how dull Emmon's Field is, I think you would like that. Being a king and hero reborn.
Don't say that.
Tom drew a deep breath. Everybody stared at him now.
That is dangerous talk. Stupid talk.
The dead can be reborn, or take a living body. And it is not something to speak of lightly. He took another breath to calm himself before going on.
The old blood, she said. The blood, not a dead man.
I've heard that it can happen sometimes.
Heard, though I never really thought. It was your roots, boy. A line running from you to your father to your grandfather right on back to Mon Etherin, and maybe beyond. Well, now you know your family is old. You ought to let it go at that and be glad. Most people don't know much more than that they had a father.
Some of us can't even be sure of that, Rand thought bitterly. Maybe the wisdom was right. Light, I hope she was.
Matt nodded at what the gleeman said.
I suppose I should. Only, do you think it has anything to do with what's happened to us? The Trollocs and all. I mean, oh, I don't know what I mean.
I think you ought to forget about it and concentrate on getting out of here safely.
Tom produced his long-stemmed pipe from inside his cloak.
And I think I'm going to have a smoke.
With a waggle of the pipe in their direction, he disappeared into the front room.
We are all in this together, not just one of us, Rand told Matt.
Matt gave himself a shake and laughed, a short bark.
Right. Well, speaking of being in things together, now that we're done with the horses, why don't we go see a little more of this city? A real city, and no crowds to jostle your elbow and poke you in the ribs. Nobody looking down their long noses at us. There's still an hour, maybe two, of daylight left.
Aren't you forgetting the Trollocs? Perrin said. Matt shook his head scornfully.
Lan said they wouldn't come in here, remember? You need to listen to what people say.
I remember, Perrin said, and I do listen. This city, Aredhal, was an ally of Mon Etherin. See, I listen.
Aredhal must have been the greatest city in the Trolloc Wars, Rand said, for the Trollocs to still be afraid of it. They weren't afraid to come into the Two Rivers, and Moraine said Mon Etherin was, how did she put it? A thorn to the Dark One's foot.
Perrin raised his hands.
Don't mention the Shepherd of the Night, please.
What do you say? Matt laughed. Let's go.
We should ask Moraine, Perrin said, and Matt threw up his hands.
Ask Moraine? You think she'll let us out of her sight? And what about Nynaeve? Blood and ashes, Perrin. Why not ask Mistress Luhan while you're about it?
Perrin nodded reluctant agreement, and Matt turned to Rand with a grin.
What about you? A real city with palaces.
He gave a sly laugh.
And no white cloaks to stare at us.
Rand gave him a dirty look, but he hesitated only a minute. Those palaces were like a gleeman's tale.
All right.
Stepping softly so as not to be heard in the front room, they left by the alley, following it away from the front of the building to a street on the other side. They walked quickly, and when they were a block away from the white stone building, Matt suddenly broke into a capering dance.
Free! He laughed. Free!
He slowed until he was turning a circle, staring at everything and still laughing. The afternoon shadows stretched long and jagged, and the sinking sun made the ruined city golden.
Did you ever dream of a place like this? Did you?
Perrin laughed too, but Rand shrugged uncomfortably. This was nothing like the city in his first dream, but just the same. If we're going to see anything, he said, we had better get on with it. There isn't much daylight left. Matt wanted to see everything, it seemed, and he pulled the others along with his enthusiasm. They climbed over dusty fountains with basins wide enough to hold everybody in Emmon's Field, and wandered in and out of structures chosen at random, but always the biggest they could find. Some they understood, and some not. A palace was plainly a palace, but what was a huge building that was one round white dome as big as a hill outside, and one monstrous room inside? and a walled place, open to the sky and big enough to have held all of Emmons Field, surrounded by row on row on row of stone benches. Matt grew impatient when they found nothing but dust or rubble or colorless rags of wall hangings that crumbled at a touch. Once some wooden chairs stood stacked against a wall. They all fell to bits when Perrin tried to pick one up. The palaces, with their huge empty chambers, some of which could have held the Winespring Inn with room to spare on every side and above as well, made Rand think too much of the people who had once filled them. He thought everybody in the Two Rivers could have stood under that one round dome, and as for the place with the stone benches, he could almost imagine he could see the people in the shadows, staring in disapproval at the three intruders disturbing their rest. Finally, even Matt tired, grand as the buildings were, and remembered that he had had only an hour's sleep the night before. Everyone began to remember that. Yawning, they sat on the steps of a tall building fronted by row on row of tall stone columns and argued about what to do next. "Go back," Rand said, "and get some sleep." He put the back of his hand against his mouth. When he could talk again, he said, "Sleep. That's all I want."
"You can sleep any time," Matt said determinedly. "Look at where we are. A ruined city. Treasure."
"Treasure?" Perrin's jaws cracked. "There isn't any treasure here. There isn't anything but dust." Rand shaded his eyes against the sun, a red ball sitting close to the rooftops.
"It's getting late, Matt. It'll be dark soon." "There could be treasure," Matt maintained stoutly. "Anyway, I want to climb one of the towers. Look at that one over there. It's whole. I'll bet you could see for miles from up there. What do you say?"
"The towers are not safe," said a man's voice behind them.
Rand leaped to his feet and spun around, clutching his sword hilt, and the others were just as quick. A man stood in the shadows among the columns at the top of the stairs. He took half a step forward, raised his hand to shield his eyes, and stepped back again.
"Forgive me," he said smoothly. "I have been quite a long time in the dark inside. My eyes are not yet used to the light."
"Who are you?"
Rand thought the man's accent sounded odd, even after Berlon. Some words he pronounced strangely so that Rand could hardly understand them.
"What are you doing here? We thought the city was empty."
"I am Mordeth."
He paused, as if expecting them to recognize the name. When none of them gave any sign of doing so, he muttered something under his breath and went on.
"I could ask the same questions of you. There has been no one in Ured Hall for a long time. A long, long time. I would not have thought to find three young men wandering its streets."
"We're on our way to Camelin," Rand said. "We stopped to take shelter for the night."
"Camelin," Mordeth said slowly, rolling the name around his tongue, then shook his head. "Shelter for the night, you say? Perhaps you will join me."
"You still haven't said what you're doing here," Perrin said.
"Why, I am a treasure hunter, of course."
"Have you found any?" Matt demanded excitedly.
Rand thought Mordeth smiled, but in the shadows he could not be sure.
"I have," the man said. "More than I expected. Much more. More than I can carry away. I never expected to find three strong, healthy young men. If you will help me move what I can take to where my horses are, you may each have a share of the rest. As much as you can carry. Whatever I leave will be gone, carried off by some other treasure hunter before I can return for it."
"I told you there must be treasure in a place like this," Matt exclaimed.
He darted up the stairs.
"We'll help you carry it. Just take us to it."
He and Mordeth moved deeper into the shadows among the columns. Rand looked at Perrin. "We can't leave him." Perrin glanced at the sinking sun and nodded. They went up the stairs warily, Perrin easing his axe in its belt loop. Rand's hand tightened on his sword, but Matt and Mordeth were waiting among the columns, Mordeth with arms folded, Matt peering impatiently into the interior.
"Come," Mordeth said. "I will show you the treasure."
He slipped inside, and Matt followed. There was nothing for the others to do but go on.
The hall inside was shadowy, but almost immediately Mordith turned aside and took some narrow steps that wound around and down through deeper and deeper dark until they fumbled their way in pitch blackness. Rand felt along the wall with one hand, unsure there was a step below, until his foot met it. Even Matt began to feel uneasy, judging by his voice when he said, "It's awfully dark down here."
"Yes, yes," Mordith replied.
The man seemed to be having no trouble at all with the dark.
"There are lights below. Come."
Indeed, the winding stairs abruptly gave way to a corridor dimly lit by scattered smoky torches set in iron sconces on the walls. The flickering flames and shadows gave Rand his first good look at Mordith, who hurried on without pausing, motioning them to follow. There was something odd about him, Rand thought, but he could not pick out what it was exactly. Mordith was a sleek, somewhat overfed man, with drooping eyelids that made him seem to be hiding behind something and staring. Short and completely bald, he walked as if he were taller than any of them. His clothes were certainly like nothing Rand had ever seen before, either. Tight black breeches and soft red boots with the tops turned down at the ankles. A long red vest, thickly embroidered in gold, and a snowy white shirt with wide sleeves, the points of his cuffs hanging almost to his knees. Certainly not the kind of clothes in which to hunt through a ruined city in search of treasure. But it was not that which made him seem strange, either. Then the corridor ended in a tile-walled room, and he forgot about any oddities Mordith might have. His gasp was an echo of his friend's. Here, too, light came from a few torches, staining the ceiling with their smoke and giving everyone more than one shadow. But that light was reflected 1,000 times by the gems and gold piled on the floor. Mounds of coins and jewelry, goblets and plates and platters, gilded, gem-encrusted swords and daggers, all heaped together carelessly in waist-high mounds. With a cry, Matt ran forward and fell to his knees in front of one of the piles.
"Sacks!" he said breathlessly, pawing through the gold. "We'll need sacks to carry all of this."
"We can't carry it all," Rand said. He looked around helplessly. All the gold the merchants brought to Emmons Field in a year would not have made the 1,000th part of just one of those mounds.
"Not now. It's almost dark."
Perrin pulled an axe free, carelessly tossing back the gold chains that had tangled around it. Jewels glittered along its shiny black handle, and delicate gold scrollwork covered the twin blades.
"Tomorrow, then," he said, hefting the axe with a grin. "Moraine and Lan will understand when we show them this." "You are not alone," Mordith said.
He had let them rush past him into the treasure room, but now he followed.
"Who else is with you?"
Matt, wrist deep in the riches before him, answered absently.
"Moraine and Lan, and then there's Nynaeve and Egwene, and Tom. He's a gleeman. We're going to Tar Valon."
Rand caught his breath. Then the silence from Mordith made him look at the man. Rage twisted Mordith's face, and fear, too. His lips pulled back from his teeth.
"Tar Valon?"
He shook clenched fists at them.
"Tar Valon? You said you were going to this Camelon. You lied to me."
"If you still want," Perrin said to Mordith, "we'll come back tomorrow and help you." Carefully, he set the axe back on the heap of gem-encrusted chalices and jewelry. "If you want."
"No, that is..."
Panting, Mordith shook his head as if he could not decide.
"Take what you want, except...
Suddenly Rand realized what had been nagging at him about the man. The scattered torches in the hallway had given each of them a ring of shadows, just as the torches in the treasure room did. Only, he was so shocked he said it out loud.
"You don't have a shadow."
A goblet fell from Matt's hand with a crash. Mordith nodded, and for the first time his fleshy eyelids opened all the way. His sleek face suddenly appeared pinched and hungry.
"So..." He stood straighter, seeming taller. "It is decided."
Abruptly, there was no seeming to it. Like a balloon, Mordith swelled, distorted, head pressed against the ceiling, shoulders butting the walls, filling the end of the room, cutting off escape. Hollow-cheeked, teeth bared in a rictus snarl, he reached out with hands big enough to engulf a man's head. With a yell, Rand leaped back. His feet tangled in a gold chain, and he crashed to the floor. The wind knocked out of him. Struggling for breath, he struggled at the same time for his sword, fighting his cloak, which had become wrapped around the hilt. The yells of his friends filled the room, and the clash of gold platters and goblets clattering across the floor. Suddenly, an agonized scream shivered in Rand's ears. Almost sobbing, he managed to inhale at last, just as he got the sword out of its sheath. Cautiously, he got to his feet, wondering which of his friends had given that scream. Perrin looked back at him, wide-eyed from across the room, crouched and holding his axe back as if about to chop down a tree. Matt peered around the side of a treasure pile, clutching a dagger snatched from the trove. Something moved in the deepest part of the shadows left by the torches, and they all jumped. It was Mordith, clutching his knees to his chest and huddled as deep into the furthest corner as he could get.
"He tricked us," Matt panted. "It was some kind of trick."
Mordith threw back his head and wailed. Dust sifted down as the walls trembled.
"You are all dead," he cried. "All dead."
And he leaped up, diving across the room. Rand's jaw dropped, and he almost dropped the sword as well. As Mordith dove through the air, he stretched out and thinned, like a tendril of smoke. As thin as a finger, he struck a crack in the wall tiles and vanished into it. A last cry hung in the room as he vanished, fading slowly away after he was gone.
"You are all dead."
"Let's get out of here," Perrin said faintly, firming his grip on his axe while he tried to face every direction at once. Gold ornaments and gems scattered unnoticed under his feet.
"But the treasure," Matt protested. "We can't just leave it now."
"I don't want anything of his," Perrin said, still turning one way after another. He raised his voice and shouted at the walls.
"It's your treasure, you hear? We're not taking any of it."
Rand stared angrily at Matt.
"Do you want him coming after us? Or are you going to wait here, stuffing your pockets until he comes back with 10 more like him?"
Matt just gestured to all the gold and jewels. Before he could say anything, though, Rand seized one of his arms, and Perrin grabbed the other. They hustled him out of the room, Matt struggling and shouting about the treasure. Before they had gone 10 steps down the hall, the already dim light behind them began to fail. The torches in the treasure room were going out. Matt stopped shouting. They hastened their steps. The first torch outside the room winked out, then the next. By the time they reached the winding stairs, there was no need to drag Matt any longer. They were all running, with the dark closing in behind them. Even the pitch black of the stairs only made them hesitate an instant. Then they sped upwards, shouting at the top of their lungs. Shouting to scare anything that might be waiting. Shouting to remind themselves they were still alive. They burst out into the hall above, sliding and falling on the dusty marble, scrambling out through the columns to tumble down the stairs and land in a bruised heap in the street. Rand untangled himself and picked Tam's sword up from the pavement, looking around uneasily. Less than half of the sun still showed above the rooftops. Shadows reached out like dark hands, made blacker by the remaining light, nearly filling the street. He shivered. The shadows looked like Mordith, reaching.
"At least we're out of it."
Matt got up from the bottom of the pile, dusting himself off in a shaky imitation of his usual manner.
"And at least I..."
"Are we?" Perrin said. Rand knew it was not his imagination this time. The back of his neck prickled. Something was watching them from the darkness in the columns. He spun around, staring at the buildings across the way. He could feel eyes on him from there, too. His grip tightened on his sword hilt, though he wondered what good it would be. Watching eyes seemed to be everywhere. The others looked around warily. He knew they could feel it, too.
"We stay in the middle of the street," he said hoarsely.
They met his eyes. They looked as frightened as he felt. He swallowed hard.
"We stay in the middle of the street, keep out of shadows as much as we can, and walk fast." "Walk very fast,"
Matt agreed fervently. The watchers followed them. Or else there were lots of watchers, lots of eyes staring out of almost every building. Rand could not see anything move, hard as he tried, but he could feel the eyes, eager, hungry. He did not know which would be worse, thousands of eyes or just a few following them. In the stretches where the sun still reached them, they slowed, just a little, squinting nervously into the darkness that always seemed to lay ahead. None of them was eager to enter the shadows. No one was really sure something might not be waiting. The watcher's anticipation was a palpable thing whenever shadows stretched across the street, barring their way. They ran through those dark places, shouting. Rand thought he could hear dry, rustling laughter. At last, with twilight falling, they came inside of the white stone building they had left what seemed like days ago. Suddenly, the watching eyes departed. Between one step and the next, they vanished in a blink. Without a word, Rand broke into a trot, followed by his friends, then a full run that only ended when they haired through the doorway and collapsed, panting. A small fire burned in the middle of the tile floor, the smoke vanishing through a hole in the ceiling in a way that reminded Rand unpleasantly of Mordoth. Everyone except Lan was there, gathered around the flames, and their reactions varied considerably. Egwene, warming her hands at the fire, gave a start as the three burst into the room, clutching her hands to her throat. When she saw who it was, a relieved sigh spoiled her attempt at a withering look. Tom merely muttered something about his pipe stem, but Rand caught the word fools before the gleeman went back to poking the flames with a stick.
"You wool-headed witlings!"
the wisdom snapped. She bristled from head to foot. Her eyes glittered and bright spots of red burned on her cheeks.
"Why under the light did you run off like that? Are you all right? Have you no sense at all? Lan is out looking for you now, and you'll be luckier than you deserve if he does not pound some sense into the lot of you when he gets back."
The Aes Sedai's face betrayed no agitation at all, but her hands had loosed a white-knuckled grip on her dress at the sight of them. Whatever Nynaeve had given her must have helped, for she was on her feet.
"You should not have done what you did," she said in a voice as clear and serene as a waterwood pond. "We will speak of it later. Something happened out there, or you would not be falling all over one another like this. Tell me."
"You said it was safe,"
Matt complained, scrambling to his feet.
"You said Aradhal was an ally of Manetherin, and Trollocs wouldn't come into the city, and—"
Moraine stepped forward so suddenly that Matt cut off with his mouth open, and Rand and Perrin paused in getting up, halfway crouched or on their knees.
"Trollocs. Did you see Trollocs inside the walls?"
Rand swallowed.
"Not Trollocs," he said,
and all three began talking excitedly, all at the same time. Everyone began in a different place. Matt started with finding the treasure, sounding almost as if he had done it alone, while Perrin began explaining why they had gone off in the first place without telling anyone. Rand jumped right to what he thought was important, meeting the stranger among the columns. But they were all so excited that nobody told anything in the order it happened. Whenever one of them thought of something, he blurted it out with no regard for what came before or after, or for who was saying what. The Watchers. They all babbled about the Watchers. It made the whole tale close to incoherent, but their fear came through. Egwene began casting uneasy glances at the empty windows fronting the street. Out there, the last remnants of twilight were fading. The fire seemed very small and dim. Tom took his pipe from between his teeth and listened with his head cocked, frowning. Moraine's eyes showed concern, but not an undue amount. Until... Suddenly the Aes Sedai hissed and grabbed Rand's elbow in a tight grip.
"Mordoth! Are you sure of that name? Be very sure, all of you. Mordoth?"
They murmured a chorused yes, taken aback by the Aes Sedai's intensity.
"Did he touch you?"
she asked them all.
"Did he give you anything, or did you do anything for him? I must know."
"No," Rand said. "None of us. None of those things."
Perrin nodded agreement and added,
"All he did was try to kill us. Isn't that enough? He swelled up until he filled half the room, shouted that we were all dead men, then vanished."
He moved his hand to demonstrate.
"Like smoke."
Egwene gave a squeak. Matt twisted away petulantly.
"Safe, you said. All that talk about Trollocs not coming here. What were we supposed to think?"
"Apparently you did not think at all," she said, coolly composed once more. "Anyone who thinks would be wary of a place that Trollocs are afraid to enter."
"Matt's doing,"
Nynaeve said, certainty in her voice.
"He's always talking some mischief or other, and the others lose the little wits they were born with when they're around him."
Moraine nodded briefly, but her eyes remained on Rand and his two friends.
Late in the Trolloc Wars, an army camped within these ruins. Trollocs, Dark Friends, Murdrol, Dreadlords, thousands in all. When they did not come out, scouts were sent inside the walls. The scouts found weapons, bits of armor, and blood splattered everywhere, and messages scratched on walls in the Trolloc tongue, calling on the Dark One to aid them in their last hour. Men who came later found no trace of the blood or the messages. They had been scoured away. Half-men and Trollocs remember still. That is what keeps them outside this place.
"And this is where you picked for us to hide?" Rand said in disbelief. "We'd be safer out there trying to outrun them."
"If you had not gone running off," Moraine said patiently, "you would know that I set wards around this building. A Murdrol would not even know these wards were there, for it is a different kind of evil they are meant to stop. But what resides in Shadar Logoth will not cross them, or even come too near. In the morning it will be safe for us to go. These things cannot stand the light of the sun. They will be hiding deep in the earth."
"Shadar Logoth," Egwene said uncertainly. "I thought you said the city was called Aridhall."
"Once it was called Aridhall," Moraine replied, "and was one of the 10 nations, the lands that made the Second Covenant, the lands that stood against the Dark One from the first days after the breaking of the world. In the days when Thorin al-Torin al-Ban was king of Mon Etherin, the king of Aridhall was Balwin Mael, Balwin Ironhand. In a twilight of despair during the Trolloc Wars, when it seemed the Father of Lies must surely conquer, the man called Mordith came to Balwin's court."
"The same man?" Rand exclaimed, and Matt said, "It couldn't be."
A glance from Moraine silenced them. Stillness filled the room except for the Aes Sedai's voice. Before Mordith had been long in the city, he had Balwin's ear, and soon he was second only to the king. Mordith whispered poison in Balwin's ear, and Aridhall began to change. Aridhall drew in on itself, hardened. It was said that some would rather see Trollocs come than the men of Aridhall. The victory of the light is all. That was the battle cry Mordith gave them, and the men of Aridhall shouted it while their deeds abandoned the light. The story is too long to tell in full and too grim, and only fragments are known, even in Tar Valon. How Thorin's son Kar came to win Aridhall back to the Second Covenant, and Balwin sat his throne a withered shell with the light of madness in his eyes, laughing while Mordith smiled at his side and ordered the deaths of Kar and the embassy as friends of the Dark. How Prince Kar came to be called Kar One-Hand. How he escaped the dungeons of Aridhall and fled alone to the Borderlands, with Mordith's unnatural assassins at his heels. How there he met Rhea, who did not know who he was, and married her, and set the skein in the pattern that led to his death at her hands, and hers by her own hand before his tomb. And the fall of Aleth Loriel. How the armies of Mon Etherin came to avenge Kar and found the gates of Aridhall torn down. No living thing inside the walls, but something worse than death. No enemy had come to Aridhall, but Aridhall. Suspicion and hate had given birth to something that fed on that which created it, something locked in the bedrock on which the city stood. Mashadar waits still, hungering. Men spoke of Aridhall no more. They named it Shadar Logoth, the place where the shadow waits, or more simply, shadows waiting. Mordith alone was not consumed by Mashadar, but he was snared by it, and he too has waited within these walls through the long centuries. Others have seen him. Some he has influenced through gifts that twist the mind and taint the spirit, the taint waxing and waning until it rules or kills. If ever he convinces someone to accompany him to the walls, to the boundary of Mashadar's power, he will be able to consume the soul of that person. Mordith will leave, wearing the body of the one he worse than killed, to wreak his evil on the world again. "The treasure," Perrin mumbled when she stopped. "He wanted us to help carry the treasure to his horses." His face was haggard. "I'll bet they were supposed to be outside the city somewhere." Rand shivered.
"But we are safe now, aren't we?" Matt asked. "He didn't give us anything, and he didn't touch us. We're safe, aren't we, with the wards you set?"
"We are safe," Moraine agreed. "He cannot cross the ward lines, nor can any other denizen of this place. And they must hide from the sunlight so we can leave safely once it is day. Now, try to sleep. The wards will protect us until Lan returns."
"He has been gone a long time."
Nynaeve looked worriedly at the night outside. Full dark had fallen, as black as pitch.
"Lan will be well,"
Moraine said soothingly, and spread her blankets beside the fire while she spoke.
"He was pledged to fight the Dark One before he left the cradle, a sword placed in his infant hands. Besides, I would know the minute of his death and the way of it, just as he would know mine. Rest, Nynaeve. All will be well."
But as she was rolling herself into her blankets, she paused, staring at the street as if she, too, would have liked to know what kept the warder. Rand's arms and legs felt like lead, and his eyes wanted to slide shut on their own, yet sleep did not come quickly, and once it did, he dreamed, muttering and kicking off his blankets. When he woke, it was suddenly, and he looked around for a moment before he remembered where he was. The moon was up, the last thin sliver before the new moon, its faint light defeated by the night. Everyone else was still asleep, though not all soundly. Egwene and his two friends twisted and murmured inaudibly. Tom's snores, soft for once, were broken from time to time by half-formed words. There was still no sign of Lan. Suddenly he felt as if the wards were no protection at all. Anything at all could be out there in the dark. Telling himself he was being foolish, he added wood to the last coals of the fire. The blaze was too small to give much warmth, but it gave more light. He had no idea what had awakened him from his unpleasant dream. He had been a little boy again, carrying Tam's sword, and with a cradle strapped to his back, running through empty streets, pursued by Mordith, who shouted that he only wanted his hand. And there had been an old man who watched them and cackled with mad laughter the whole time. He gathered his blankets and lay back, staring at the ceiling. He wanted very much to sleep, even if he had more dreams like the last one. But he could not make his eyes close. Suddenly the warder trotted silently out of the darkness into the room. Moraine came awake and sat up as if he had rung a bell. Lan opened his hand. Three small objects fell to the tiles in front of her with a clink of iron. Three blood-red badges in the shape of horned skulls. "There are Trollocs inside the walls," Lan said. "They will be here in little more than an hour. And the Davil are the worst of them." He began waking the others. Moraine smoothly began folding her blankets.
"How many? Do they know we are here?"
She sounded as if there were no urgency at all. "I don't think they do," Lan replied. "They are well over 100, frightened enough to kill anything that moves, including one another. The half-men are having to drive them, 4 just to handle one fist. And even the Murdral seem to want nothing more than to pass through the city and out as quickly as possible. They are not going out of their way to search, and they're so slipshod that if they were not heading nearly straight for us, I would say we had nothing to worry about." He hesitated.
"There is something else?"
"Only this," Lan said slowly. "The Murdral forced the Trollocs into the city. What forced the Murdral?" Everyone had been listening in silence. Now Tom cursed under his breath, and Egwene breathed a question.
"The Dark One?"
"Don't be a fool, girl," Nynaeve snapped. "The Dark One is bound in Sheol Ghul by the Creator."
"For the time being, at least," Moraine agreed. "No, the Father of Lies is not out there. But we must leave in any case."
Nynaeve eyed her narrowly.
"Leave the protection of the wards and cross Shadar Logoth in the night?"
"Or stay here and face the Trollocs," Moraine said.
"To hold them off here would require the one power. It would destroy the wards and attract the very thing the wards are meant to protect against. Besides, as well build a signal fire atop one of those towers for every half-man within 20 miles. To leave is not what I would choose to do, but we are the hare, and it is the hounds who dictate the chase."
"What if there are more outside the walls?" Matt asked. "What are we going to do?"
We will use my original plan, Moraine said. Lan looked at her. She held up a hand and added, which I was too tired to carry out before, but I am rested now, thanks to the wisdom. We will make for the river. There, with our backs guarded by the water, I can raise a smaller ward that will hold the Trollocs and Halfmen back until we can make rafts and cross over. Or better yet, we may even be able to hail a trader's boat coming down from Saldaea. The faces of the Emmonsfielders looked blank. Lan noticed.
Trollocs and Murdrol loathe deep water. Trollocs are terrified of it. Neither can swim. A half-man will not wade anything more than waist-deep, especially if it's moving. Trollocs won't do even that, if they can find any way to avoid it.
So, once we get across the river, we're safe, Rand said, and the warder nodded.
The Murdrol will find it almost as hard to make the Trollocs build rafts as it was to drive them into Shadar Logoth. And if they try to make them cross the Arunel that way, half will run away, and the rest probably drown.
Get to your horses, Moraine said. We are not across the river yet.
Chapter 20 Dust on the Wind. As they left the Whitestone building on their nervously shifting horses, the icy wind came in gusts, moaning across the rooftops, whipping cloaks like banners, driving thin clouds across the thin sliver of the moon. With a quiet command to stay close, Lan led off down the street. The horses danced and tugged at the reins, eager to be away. Rand looked up warily at the buildings they passed, looming now in the night with their empty windows like eye sockets. Shadows seemed to move. Occasionally there was a clatter, rubble toppled by the wind. At least the eyes are gone. His relief was momentary. Why are they gone? Tom and the Emmonsfielders made a cluster with him, all keeping close enough to touch one another. Egwene's shoulders were hunched, as if she were trying to ease Bella's hooves to the pavement. Rand did not even want to breathe. Sound might attract attention. Abruptly, he realized that a distance had opened ahead of them, separating them from the warder and the Aes Sedai. The two were indistinct shapes, a good 30 paces ahead. We're falling behind, he murmured, and booted Cloud to a quicker step. A thin tendril of silver-gray fog drifted low across the street ahead of him.
Stop!
It was a strangled shout from Moraine, sharp and urgent, but pitched not to carry far. Uncertain, he pulled up short. The splinter of fog lay completely across the street now, slowly fattening as if more